that you'll...
I am going to open
the sound. Oh, fuck.
Very good.
What? You're pointing
at? Yeah, I mean, we have another minute on the clock here.
Okay, let's just wait 1 minute. Well, the... I actually will call the meeting to order. And I'm assuming that everyone has had an opportunity to look at the agenda for the day. And now would be the ideal time to state whether you have any conflicts of interest in any of the matters that are before us today.
No.
Hearing none.
Nope.
Let's move forward to the first agenda item, which is Madrona School. Welcome.
Thank you. So this is our second visit, and some of this will be a repeat. I just left it up there to help orient everyone, and anyone who's new from last time, I think it's the same group that we talked about last time.
Same group, yep.
So I'll go through that pretty quickly and then get to some of the things we talked about at the last meeting and how we responded. And I wanted to start by introducing Eric Engelbrecht. He is a board member and on the campus committee at Madrona, and just to say a few words about Madrona generally, and then we'll get right into the project.
Sure. Thanks, John. Thanks for your time today, for allowing us to be here. For your knowledge, a brief summary, Madrona School was started in 1999. A few interested families came together to start developing an offering for Bainbridge Island for the Waldorf educational model. In that time, we've grown, where we now have over 100 families and over 130 students. We're currently housed in Eagle Harbor Church. We're quickly outgrowing the capacity of that church, and we're looking to build a new school. The previous owners of the property were keenly interested in having a benefit to the community and who they sold their land to, and really appreciated the idea and the philosophy of an educational school of our nature being present on their property versus selling it for more standard real estate development. A collective group of parents acquired the land formed an LLC, in which now currently they lease to the school for various uses that we have right now. So it was our goal to, obtaining a CUP, a permit, to move forward with a campaign to acquire the land and to build this school in the phases that we stipulated in our proposal, and working with John, SKL Architects, it's been a wonderful endeavor, and we're very excited. So thank you again for your time.
And as part of that process, we are at master planning phase, not schematic design, because we want to make sure this process goes forward before the schematic design kicks into gear. Most projects you'd see at this stage would be well into schematics. We're still at master planning. So, just jumping in, again, you've seen this before, this early part, but just to get everyone oriented, if this can move. Apologies, I was moving earlier.
Sat around too long.
Yeah, you still say.
Turned it off and back on. I shouldn't have done that.
Sorry. Is it a PowerPoint?
It is.
So we can put it up on here too if you.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There. Okay.
Okay.
We just have it at some point. So, middle of the island. Right here's the site.
Can we get back up one more? Yeah. I just want to get oriented there again.
And it's all right. Madison is here, Valley Road is just north of that.
Yep.
That's the red block, is the site. Zooming in, that same red block is 329 feet tall, 632 feet wide. It's in an R1 zone, and all the white blocks around are houses and garages. So you get a sense of the neighborhood. There's an existing house on the site and an existing sort of maintenance structure which will be torn down. The house will remain in the early phases and then be torn down in a later phase, phase three.
And what's the green blocking around the borders?
Green blocking is existing vegetation that will be remain as a buffer zone.
Okay.
So the house will be used, rented out or something, or continue to be used?
The house will be used as a caretaker residence.
Okay.
And then when the third phase is built, which is the gymnasium, auditorium, there's a caretaker unit that gets built on the end of that.
Okay.
And then the house will come down.
Okay.
Is it too early to ask about the house?
Not at all.
Is there a 100% chance that in phase three you'll demolish the house, or can you relocate it on the site, or why are you demolishing it?
The report we got was that it's, or that Madrona got, was that it's not quite worth saving in terms of its age and ability to stand up over time.
But it's going to be good enough to stand up until you build a gymnasium.
That's the idea, yeah.
I hope you reconsider that in the course of having the...
It's possible. One part is if we don't tear it down, we'll be over our square footage limit. But part of that square footage limit is an apartment on the side of the auditorium. There's no reason the house couldn't stay from a site planning perspective. You'll see it. With the house up, the site still works.
Yeah.
If we took the apartment off.
I think that house is actually on a secondary list of kind of significant old island character sort of studies.
Okay.
And if you, I'm sure it's a long time between now and when you're building your gymnasium.
It is.
So maybe your viewpoint about that can change. But anyhow.
And can I see
that's worth having as an option? Yeah.
Okay. About that blocking, because when I look at this map that's got the, I guess these are the buffers around the outside.
Right.
That seems larger than any, or is it this line here? Is it this dotted line? Just trying to see where this is compared to that is.
So, big enough.
That's the
35
feet. The tree line is this sort of line like this.
Yeah, okay.
And it doesn't follow exact straight lines, but we sort of... Averaged it across here at 35 feet on this side, 25 feet on the back.
Okay.
53 here, 25 here, and down to 15.
And the reason why I ask is that then that tree line in relation to that buffer, so these I guess are significant trees out here that I can see on the plan there, and they're remaining, these guys?
Right.
All
right.
Through there?
Right.
Okay.
And the most significant is a Madrona tree in the middle of the site.
Okay.
Because of the name of the school, plus it's a nice tree.
Yeah, there you go.
We planned around that particular tree. Any other questions on the general site? Where you see that B picture there, street front is the next slide showing what the street frontage looks like. That's the 329-foot lot there. And the plan is to come in at this same existing driveway and then back out to the north end of the site. Next image, we'll be looking in the driveway. Again, will remain the same. Going around the corner, that landscape buffer will remain. Go around the corner to the parking lot, and it'll run across the front of the site. And that's the house we were discussing, that currently we're proposing having it remain until phase three. But I think we should look at what would happen if we just kept it, because it works on the site. Then you can kind of see as you move into the middle of the site and look towards the southeast corner, sort of across this way down the garden. Madrona right now has a garden that they started in the middle. The plans are phase one, grades 1 through 8, 9 classrooms, 4 offices. That's this building here. Phase two is a smaller early childhood, 4 classrooms. And then phase three is gymnasium assembly building, which is here. And it has 3 classrooms underneath it.
When you say early childhood, are you meaning K and pre-K?
Exactly. 2 of each, 2 classrooms of each. Total square footage is 26,000 square feet. We tucked things underneath other things to keep our total footprint at 15,640 square feet, which is 7.5% of the lot area, which is half of the 15% that you're allowed because it's in an R1 zone. Parking 39 cars per code, and then the drop-off zone can also be used for parking, say, when there's an assembly here. So there's an extra 5 spaces that are used for pickup and drop-off.
Is that going to be asphalt?
Currently, yes, it's planned as asphalt with gravel access roads along the sides. These were our basic ideas for the site planning. Keep as many existing trees as you can, solar access, keeping the cars at the edge of the site because it's such a beautiful site, so that from here over, no cars. Then having on-site queuing for cars, so that the arrangement of the parking lot allows cars picking up and dropping off to be on-site rather than spilling out onto Madison. Keeping all parking on-site and keeping our mass down to respect the square. It's a 30-foot height limit, but we're trying to keep it down to 2 stories wherever possible. So as a site, taking all those concepts into play, best solar access is up on this side of the site. Keeping the cars here and retaining this buffer, sort of that's where we get this sort of angled parking lot to keep this stand of trees in the corner as much as possible. And then, obviously, our septic and detention needs to be downhill, so it puts it over in that corner. Did you have a question?
Well, yeah, just on the parking, when we saw this before, I think we had a similar concern, but 39 is what the code allows, and the, sorry, the 36 yeah. and 3, or what, 39 and 3, or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that enough for the school?
Oh, yes, it is.
And most people will drive to pick up the kids. They'll drive in and pick up and
drop off.
And if you look at that parking lot, maybe there's 10 cars lined up, 10 or 12 cars lined up. I'm worried about cars spilling out onto the street during queuing up, waiting for their kids. Do you think that's going to be an issue?
We have a traffic consultant, and we laid this out with him, and the idea with a 20-foot drive aisle for the parking lot is you can set up 2 lanes for queuing. So that gets us 16 and then another 12. So that's 28 on site at a given time. That's a third of the cars, I think, that are, let's see. Well, first of all, staff is 18 staff, so they take up these parking spaces. Get the numbers here. There's 167 trips in, 146 out. The reason the 167 is more is because it's the 18 staff that stay on site. So 146 is the count they're assuming between 8 o'clock and 9 a.m., which is our peak time. So I think in the duration of time that they're expecting, I think the idea is that all the cars fit on the site. Not the 146,
right.
But when they're funneling through at the rate that they're going, that it works.
Drop-off tends to be much less of an issue because it's staggered over the time before school starts. The bigger problem is when there's pickup because it's that time of day.
Right.
So there's people waiting.
That's
so you have to consider that you got a lot of people waiting and what to do with it. And if you visit any other schools on the island, you'll see that that's a huge problem.
It also presupposes that the cars are queued up sort of like getting on the ferry at a, you know, paying your ticket. You can't pick your kid up until you get to the top car.
Right.
So if you're in the back, you're going to go.
Yeah.
And the time to do that is. I just think that's going to be difficult. And I think there's going to be spillage onto Madison.
I think just a couple of things to insert here as well. And I know you haven't got into the bigger site plan yet, but my question had to do with the parking and the access and the drop-off of kids and pick-up of kids. The K and pre-K is quite removed.
Right.
Over towards the east. And yet those children and the parents may be the ones that take the longest to actually leave the classroom, eventually get to their vehicle. And it's, so it seems like if the first several ones of your blue cars here are people picking up the kids that are in K or pre-K,
right,
and by the time the dad has walked all the way down to get the kids and got the kids all the way back, no one else in the line has been able to move.
Right. Well,
is that correct?
Well, I think for kindergarten, we did talk to the school about this, about where to locate it. And our first instinct was to put it right up front. The school, they've had the kids out there, and they really like this corner of the site. So they actually want them to be somewhat removed from the site. But that does bring up the question. They're the ones that need to typically have a parent with them when they're walking.
Well, in the weather, it takes longer, the weather, you obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, I doubt whether you're going to have the budget for covered walkways, it just is an issue that sort of, the problems associated with it get compounded.
So the kindergarten pickup and drop-off, I believe, is at a
different time,
slightly staggered
time.
So it was intended that they would be in a different, there's sort of a fast-paced, higher grades going through, and so the parents for kindergarten typically park here, walk their kid along this path to the kindergarten, and walk back and then go out.
And also, access.
We've discussed perhaps allowing this access road to be used, and you could pull in here, but we also want to keep it open for, it's the fire access is its main role, so we don't want to get clogged up. But if you have a particular ADA or other issue that you want to come down this hill, that would be another access point for the kindergarten.
I have a question for you. Ron mentioned to me in an email earlier today that there is an additional request for your traffic study?
Yes.
Do you explain that to the
traffic study, which all of you have seen it, there was an additional request to study the intersection at Highway 305 and Sportsman Club Road, where Madison comes down.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly in the mornings is the issue. The afternoons for this school don't correspond with rush hour, but the morning does. And so the biggest concern is cars leaving this site and going to that intersection, heading southbound, which is getting really messed up. And originally the city thought that was a larger island problem, but it's going to be studied as part of this. What the school has done in response is the plan is to have right turn only exit out of the place. So
it just means people are doing U-turns on Madison.
That won't go over very well.
Well,
yeah, because they still kind of have to get rid of the die, right?
If you go to South Island,
but if you got to die, and you have the same problem with die when you come off Phelps, you've got that same convergence right there.
Yeah, I think we're just trying to avoid the very worst condition.
Yes.
But they needed to go somewhere.
Sure.
Heading north. Half the families head north anyway, but there's just the morning people heading south.
What the traffic study said is most of them head south. That's what the traffic study said.
Which makes it even more ironic. If they make a right turn only, when that's not where anyone wants to go.
Well, see, a lot of them are probably going to the ferry or stuff. They're dropping their kids off and then
going
to work.
I think the traffic study is being redone. I disagree at that point about most of them coming from the south.
I think that's what it says in the study. I read the study. I believe that's what it says.
There was some discussions.
I have a copy in front of me to read. But
we should, let's follow up on that. There's some discussions between Missy, who's been doing sort of counts where parents live, and the traffic study. And I agree with you. So just let's get the information to you and make sure it's right.
Well, and the point is that that traffic study for the intersection at the highway has not been done yet. And it's already a congested intersection in the mornings. I live near the school, and if you drive in that during that time, 8:30 to 9:30, you will have backups, maybe one or two lanes. And why that wasn't included in the original study, that's probably not your responsibility, but it should have been, because it's a major inconvenience already.
Well, the other thing that goes along with this, and I know your school, when it's built out, it's not going to be the size of a school such as Blakely. But, you know, currently, Blakely parents stop on both sides of the street to avoid what you're proposing here, which is pulling off of the main road into an area that runs in front of the school buildings where it gets congested, people can't go forward, and so they line up on both sides of the street where they're dropping the kids off. So I guess you can't stop things like that. I mean, people will do what they do. But I was going to ask you, have you given any thought to any footpaths connecting through from Madison through your buffer?
We have not, for that reason that we don't ever want anyone pulling off on Madison. Now, the question is, what's human nature? And then there's also a question of, is there a difference between an independent school and a public school in terms of the ability of the staff to control the parents? I've heard that. I don't know that if that's in practice or if you trust that that happens. Missy does seem to have, at least the current headmaster seems to have good control of what her parents are doing. But I do understand that human nature is to take shortcuts and subvert the system.
Can you go back to your picture of the street?
So, our intent in general, and after talking to the neighbors, is to keep any traffic and any parking off Madison. And that's what we're...
And is that an open drain on the right-hand side?
It is.
Yes.
Open swales on the
side. Yeah, open swales.
There wouldn't be any parking on that one.
No, you wouldn't be able to park there. But yeah. You can see where people want to park off right off of Windsong and probably down into Windsong to avoid
when you're crossing the street.
Yeah.
Well, you might park right where it says next image.
Yes, exactly.
And there was an event that was held where people did park onto Windsong, and that caused lots of problems with the neighbors. The next year's event, Missy told everyone you cannot park there no matter what, and no one parked there. So they did self-correct in that case.
Yeah, we've already discussed that we would set requirements, staggered start times as appropriate for the various grades. Be very clear with the parents in terms of where parking is allowed, what times, what's acceptable. And we've already made a number of outreach efforts with the Windsong Loop community with regards to where we're at with the design and mitigation or stipulations that we would put into effect to minimize any impact. As a baseline for reference, right now we're just down here at Eagle Harbor Church. It's a four-way stop. You know, school start times for K through eighth grade and pickup times are what they are now. We have had no concerns or engagement from the city or police with respect to traffic congestion or holdup or accessibility to that location. In conjunction with the revision of the traffic study, Missy herself, along with staff, has been monitoring what the drop-off and pick-up time frames are, the students, the driving that's coming, to give more input and specific data about the patterns that are occurring here at this location to feed into the traffic study. to address the question earlier about why the intersection with 305 wasn't originally included, when we went to start the permit process over a year ago, it was at a time when the city of Bainbridge Island had chosen to take ownership over traffic studies, where previously when you went to submit and apply for a permit, it was the responsibility of that the group requesting the permit to get their own traffic consultant to develop the appropriate scope and submit that study to the city. At that time, the city said, here's your choices. We chose one, and then the responsibility to execute the study, determine the scope of the study, and what specifically the information that needed to come from that was directed by the city. We found out since that it was determined to be incomplete based off concerns from the community, so we are going back and we are updating and increasing the scope of that study so that we have a more comprehensive view, in particular including the intersection with 305.
It would seem like the real solution is the timing of pickup and drop-off. Right? I imagine that it's kind of awkward to truly stagger that out more than saying, you know, half the school at this time and half the school at that time, but it would seem that even if it was in 5-minute increments or something, it would make a huge difference to the flow, wouldn't it? But it's hard to manage as a school with teachers starting at different times and so on. I could imagine.
And siblings and carpools.
Yeah, right, siblings and carpools.
Do you actually have now or anticipate in the future any mini school buses?
We have spoken about it for sure, absolutely. So we do imagine that at some point. There's no, I can't answer to anything specific at this time, but that's definitely in our conversations at a board level with the head of school as to transportation solutions for students going forward.
Would that ever be sort of a condition of permitting that somebody submits a parking plan based on staggered time, and that can be part
as
of the
CUP? It could certainly be part of their conditions of approval.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I have a question about trees there. I see about, and thank you really for putting this on there, so it looks like about 21 trees are going to go here. Is there any information about the calipers of those trees and what they, I mean, I can say by the size of the drawings that they seem fairly big trees.
I'm trying to think now, we had a survey done and identified most of the trees.
Yeah.
We asked them, we said, don't worry about this area here because we're not really doing anything.
Yeah,
but over here, one of these is identified, and I believe where they're identified in the survey, I believe that they...
Did they do a little table of them by any chance?
There is a table, each of these has a number.
Correct.
And that's on it. Here's the table. Yeah, you might need a magnifying glass.
So if it is 21 trees and some of them are fairly large, I don't think there's, obviously by the amount of greenery that you're going to retain, you're going to be well within your buffers. But would there be any undertaking to kind of do a one-for-one for what you take, you put back somewhere? By caliper? I mean, the code doesn't require it. I just wondered whether you'd do it.
I think as a planting a new tree,
yeah,
not the same caliper.
That would
be a nice project.
It would seem like, you know, if you do some sort of balancing act, even though it doesn't take into account, you know, habitat loss and soil loss and water loss into the system, which are all grave concerns over time, because I have this little photo to show you. I'm sorry it's not very good, but I'd love you guys to see it. This is the canopy loss. Olaf gave us this a while ago. On the island from 2000 to 2012.
It's red?
Yeah, red dots. And I think most of the island, if we put that on the front page of the island, it would be a little bit shocked. And I'm sure that add 3 more years to that, plus what's on the boards, it's getting mowed down pretty fast. So it's something I want to encourage everybody who's talking about taking trees out to actually, even though the code doesn't require it, part of what we're here to do is to see if we can encourage you to try harder, even though you've got a lot of restrictions and things that you're trying to meet in every way that you can. But it seems like we're all going to be in trouble if we don't do something about
it. Well, that fits with the mission of the school. I think
that's
they get a tree planting project.
But I don't know how we create that as something that's just not nice to have and see you later. So but actually say, would you commit, because it would certainly help get my vote, make a commitment to do something constructive about replacing the number of trees that are going to be taken down, even though the code doesn't require it.
Yeah.
It would help get my vote if you did it.
I'm going to suggest we allow you to get back to your presentation we can move on.
I can't speak totally for the school, I'm just the architect, but I think it would be a great project.
I can tell you right now as a board member that we would commit to something.
Correct.
For sure. A means to mitigate the canopy loss or the effect that's occurring.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You kind of interrupted you, didn't I?
That's fine. That's cool.
And I just want to close up what we were talking about before moving far forward. So we're big proponents of making sure that your parking and drive-through issues are resolved. And I think some of the things we mentioned last time were like angle-in parking for some of the open spaces.
Got that.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other two is just to help alleviate the amount of traffic that goes on here, because it all is going to happen in very short windows. So you want things to move. So your double lane thing could be a challenge because, to Joe's point, you got somebody up front waiting for their kid, and you got people in the back whose kids are now in the car, or vice versa. It's not going to move. So you want to probably have some way to be able to pull out and leave when you have your kid. And then lastly, in your out lanes, you should account for left and right-hand turn if left is going to be an option, so that you can actually get out of the school. You'll notice that at Woodward, their left-hand turn lane is about one car size, so everybody wanting to turn right has to wait for two left-hand turn cars. Right. So you want the left lane to be a pretty sizable one, so the number of cars can sit there. And do that without cutting any trees down.
Can we cut the hole through a little bit?
Okay.
All right. Do you want to get back to
your question? Yes. Yeah. All right.
So that's sort of the site. I talked about what we're up to there. Site planning. This was our basic block model that we ended up with, this basic plan for the site with the school, which is grades up with the solar access, early childhood. They liked it sort of downhill in the back there in their own little world. And then the gymnasium assembly off of the playing field. That's sort of where it ended up as a design sketch. And then this is what it looks like now as we've turned it in. That's basically this drawing turned in as a conditional use permit drawing. We just talked about the parking, and I think we need to do a little work on how that works and maybe talk to our traffic consultant and make sure. We don't want anyone parking on Madison or queuing on Madison. That's not going to happen, so we need to make this work. Verify that with the traffic engineer. At the last meeting, we talked about angle parking, and I just visited a school we did in West Seattle and noticed that was the straight parking we put in, and they came back and did angle parking. So I think that's a good idea. That they have the same thing when they have two lines of people queuing through, and they run the operation with sort of like a military style, five teachers out there.
Makes a big difference.
But they switched to angle parking, so I think that's the way to go. We took a look here in sketch form at angle parking, and it works pretty well in the same footprint that we had before, so we'd like to go with that. It's not in the CUP drawing yet, but we'd like to make that revision.
So to paraphrase what you're saying, you're commending the DRB for having a good idea.
Yes, okay. At first I was resistant, it works.
Not only that, he reinforced it with an independent study.
I was just funny, I was out there the other day, I was like, oh, yeah, they just restriped. So anyway, that's a 75 degree, and it works well because it shortens up the aisle a little bit and still fits. So that's sort of putting that into the site. Mm-hmm. And again, it's pretty much the same area, even though there's a little inefficiency, a little diagonals, but it works. The other thing we talked about since last time is a little bit more formal, occasional parking, so that if there's an event in the gymnasium that exceeds this parking capacity, we're sure that it can be handled on site. So there's, I think, 8 spaces here just mapped out. You can barely see it.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what the site condition would be there? In other words, if it was lawn, will that drain and not end be just a big squishy area?
If it's used more than 4 or 5 times a year, it'll start to get pretty cruddy. So
have you ever used that cellular parking map?
I have not.
The reason why I mention it, I've done that, and it's actually pretty good. It's rated to be able to hold fire trucks, and it's not that expensive.
Is that the plastic?
The plastic stuff.
Yeah.
So you put down a permeable gravel bed with the sand and pea gravel.
Yeah.
And that stuff, it lawns up really well, and just give you that little extra bit of durability. It's really easy to put down.
Still okay for kids to play on it?
What's that?
Still okay for kids to play on it?
Yeah, it gets its lawn. Yeah, it's good.
That's our main concern. It's primarily a play field.
So. Sure.
I think it builds up. You don't even know it's there if it's done properly.
And you can actually crown it a little bit. So that it's actually physically higher when you put the soil on.
Right.
And it still drains, but the grass really lives in that crown, so it works really well.
So in regards to the auditorium, there are concerns in the neighborhood about the capacity, and there will be special events, and there won't be enough parking on site, and people are going to park on the street.
Right. So here we have 80 plus the, I forget what our other count was, 39. So
80.
You allow me to round up, 120 parking spaces for this space. The code only requires the 39, but I think we know that more people than that will show up to an event. We've talked about a 400-seat auditorium. It isn't. It fits 400 people in little chairs. So here's a sketch of how the. Let's see. I don't have that.
People from the 1860s, even a little smaller people.
What we size it for is as small as it can be to fit how many kids? 200 kids and their parents in a room. It's 43 by 70 feet. It's not a large auditorium, but it will require parking in our events, and we've dealt with it by opening this up and making sure that the parking will be accommodated on site. The backup is having shuttle vans to another off-site location. And I don't remember
they use the Grange before.
There are a couple places around that.
The other document to reference is Missy put together a parking and transportation plan for the school that addresses all the things we're talking about now. And I want you all to have that document. I think we submitted with the CUP, I think. And that should be sort of a formal document about how the school is proposing to deal with traffic and parking.
I don't know whether you have any other site plans, so maybe this is the right time to ask a question. What is your allowed lot coverage, and what is the lot coverage that you are resulting in?
The allowed is 7.5% of the lot, and we are proposing 7.5%. This zone, R1, is 15%, is the typical. If you're building houses here, it would be 15% lot coverage. When you build an institution in a residential zone, it's the city said, let's reduce it down to half to keep the density down. So we have, in early plans, there was an intent to keep a lot of things all at grade, and we've ended up stacking. So, for instance, the pre-K stacks one over the other to keep the site coverage down. And similarly, there are classrooms underneath here that work going down the hillside to keep the site coverage low.
It's quite a slope.
Yeah, it starts to go. It doesn't feel that steep when you're there, but I was surprised at the topo.
Yeah.
This part right in here is where it gets the steepest.
The gradation.
Yeah.
That was me.
The lab was under there. What's that?
That's the drain.
So I had two questions if this is a time to begin or interrupt in your presentation, but this is a good time to talk about. Okay. I want to talk about accessibility for a minute. You know, you made the comment earlier about using the upper fire lane, you know, possibly to get people there for accessibility or something. And that just brought up a red flag. I'm going to assume that you're going to design it to the ADA.
Yes.
And it does seem steep going on the back side there. And I'm just wondering if you looked at grades yet. And do you anticipate any problems with the meeting the...
It's a challenge.
It's going to be a challenge.
We're showing an elevator here, an elevator here.
Okay.
We're not showing an elevator in this building, but using paths to get to it. To get down to this level, we use the elevator in this building and then go flat across here.
Okay. So getting from... So your earlier idea, or someone was mentioning about a pathway from the middle of the parking lot right there, straight across, right through there, that... Can that be accessible if you were to do that?
This is an accessible path. You can see how it follows
The grade. The grades looks
not, you know, we can just do some slight grading to get this to be an accessible path to
this, that building.
This point. And then from here,
you go down.
Slopes down gently across. You can see it's kind of going across the
contours.
So that was that path. And then there's another path here where you come in here. This part of the building is set at a half level off so that you can go down an elevator and get down to a lower level to this upper level here. So it's a challenging site that way as you move.
But with elevators, I think you can get to it.
So
the only thing you'd want to make sure you do if you're doing gravel access drive is wherever the car stops, is that area is paved.
It's paved,
At the,
It's the space, The other question I had, to go along with Jim's earlier comment about saving the house, or doing something about the house, if that was an option, and hopefully it would be something you might look at, the way site plan now there looks, that the corner between the house and your wing there is sort of problematic, you know, it seems like.
Yeah.
In terms of, and it would be nice if there was a thinking of doing that, of how could that be, that intersection be a little fixed up. It looks like it's kind of
right now strange. What we're doing is getting it tight enough that we can put a gate here, gate and a fence here, and use the build fence here so that the buildings form a compound that contains the kids and keeps the deer out of the garden. So without having a whole bunch of fence everywhere. So that this actually is part of our site border, I guess.
Okay.
But in terms of the corner between the two, they're one's doing one thing, one's doing another. They're different periods of building, different times. Now we just have a gate. I don't know quite yet. I'll put it in the...
If you were really going to look at that as an alternative, you might want to have to rework that window or something to make it so that it was more... If that was really going to be an option, there's a reason to do that.
Yeah, and you could do it with vegetation.
You could.
Because what's around the house really has no function at all at the moment, right? When everything's built, that white area around the house really isn't performing any practical function. This stuff around here, that's got no actual...
No, it's just basically landscape.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, you could still make the house independent of that. With it. Just stick a plant in front of it.
Where's your handicap? Do you have any for the meeting space, phase three?
ADA is here, and that would go to this path to the front door.
So that would be it?
Yeah. It's a long path, but it's, again...
And this is just fire down here?
That's just fire access.
That one, with a little T, and up there the same way?
Exactly.
Okay. And those would all be okay places, if you could do it, to have
a handicap spot, wouldn't they?
They would. For events or something.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is for access for events, and yeah and we could do that. Yeah.
Yeah, because you could use that out of flat parking if you had a little path there or something.
Yeah.
Make a mess of your drawings.
That's okay.
Then you're going to pay that part of it too, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah, just
pay
it right there, so you're going to pay the free stuff.
Get back to your presentation.
Okay. since our last meeting, we had a correction to from the city to talk about lighting, site lighting, and we're trying to keep it pretty simple with bollard lights that are about this high on the pathways, mm-hmm. and then simple sconces on the buildings that are pretty minimal, and trying to keep it just enough to create safe pathways and get a little light on entry points. But again, as we're in a residential neighborhood, keeping the light level down. At the last meeting, there was some discussion about our service areas and site grubbing and, you know, all the stuff that's coming off the site, and we sort of identified two. One here and here, accessed by those gravel roads we were talking about. So that's compost, recycling, and foliage that comes off the site.
Do you have much earth moving that you've got to do overall? Either those levels, or is it sort of cut and fill? Or?
It's primarily cut and fill, where we try and cut into the site half and,
yep.
and go out half. So I think it's more cut than fill. So we'll be sending some dirt off the site. That was to get the buildings sort of down into the site and then use the hillside. So that, for instance, you'll see on the next drawings that this is at, this terrace is a level down from this terrace, so it follows the hillside.
You know, we try and take as little fill out as possible these days and try and make berms wherever you can, because kids love rolling up and down little berm hills and things. And, you know, it's just something to think about.
It doesn't quite show here, but one idea here is to push this out for this mm-hmm. pre-K playground, to
yeah.
take the cut mm-hmm. and push it out and make it look flat.
Yeah. Because then you don't have to necessarily do retaining walls, just slap it, you know, just slap
right.
it away.
So that's sort of looking at the site from the southeast, the three different phases.
Can we go back? Oh, there it is. Okay, got it. Just consume that for a second.
Oh, yeah, so, there's the sort of drop-off area. Admins here looks out over the play field and looks back to the drop-off, so they can monitor both sides of the equation. There's a flex room up above. The idea is to have solar facing this way. And classrooms are here. Then the early childhood here. Here's that little berm we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the assembly hall.
And is that solar on the assembly hall too?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we actually went one step further, and we'll talk about this since we turn this in, we're looking at changing this roof from this way to this
really
way to take advantage of
solar.
So,
but with that much solar, you could probably get net zero or even become a provider.
I hope so. Yeah, and it's interest of the schools.
Yeah.
And are those logs there the ones of the trees that will be coming down?
Exactly.
All that stuff.
Yeah. And hopefully we can use it to build some of the trim work in school. That's that's always the holy grail, is doing
sure.
on-site milling, because
yeah.
you have to kiln it and dry it, but we may have time to do that.
So if we're thinking about your phases in terms of the construction schedule, do you currently have enough classroom space in phase one to satisfy your current school needs? And what triggers moving into phase two?
I believe,
or phase three.
Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, but the early childhood would stay in Winslow. Yeah, until they're ready to build. So that's more of a funding issue when they can raise the funds for it. This will take care of their current grades 1 through 8.
So you have a demand right now for the whole thing. So it's really, the facing is more not about growth, it's about funding.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's a little bit of a push and pull. We're trying to get green roofs as much as possible to help. The percolation didn't come back well on the site. There's not a lot of storage in the ground for water. So we had to have the detention pond, which we don't like, but it just worked that way with civil engineering. So the civil engineer is pushing us to use as much green as possible, but we also want to have solar. So anyway.
And why don't you like the detention pond?
Oh, it just, I don't know.
It's drowning.
Kids drowning.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. It's an architect's nightmare, but it's a landscape architect's.
Yeah, it's a nice style architect's room.
Oh, it's a beautiful pond. Yeah, that's great. It's just, they tend to get
the maintenance.
There's a maintenance problem with them and stuff.
So as long as there's not a chain link fence around it.
So,
yeah, no,
so
that's
in the long run,
one thing is that the bio ponds, we filter through gravel. In Europe now, public swimming pools are made that way. And it's not actually that expensive to manage ponds much better. And it's kind of interesting to, if you're forced into it,
right,
think about that as a filtration possibility, because they're actually working really well. So it's a non-chemical, and for a pond that big, pretty reasonable for the pump.
Okay.
Just because, yeah, it would be lovely if you could have one.
But
it's got to be shallow.
I even think rain gardens, and what the Sylvans was trying to say, you know, doing stuff on the roof and stuff, but just rain gardens throughout would help bring, slow the water down, help it percolate in a little bit before it got to the detention point.
You have rain gardens for the parking lot, which would be nice as a feature. I think the perk is working a little better over here than it was on that side.
But even if you sort of did a series of them, rather than one big one, and turn this big long horrible walkway thing down the side of the park, of the parking, you know, you could make that a stream and make that really wonderful if you did a series of ponds and some landscaping and bring the logs down there. And they only have to be pretty shallow, you know, the ponds can be 3 or 4 inches deep.
Yeah,
it'll finish, I think, quite a bit deeper than that. If you really are going for these to be state approved working rain gardens. If it becomes part of a stormwater
management.
Yeah.
A big issue with civil.
The technical specs are severe.
For
rain gardens.
It's funny, we did have that early on. Part of what's pushing it is that the site can't absorb water very well.
Okay.
So infiltration, just from the civil engineer's point of view, we're like, come on. It just won't go in the ground. So instead, we have to detain it in a big pond that's deep, too deep for kids to wade into. And so that's the word. Anyway.
I would like to see, I think we talked about before, was the goal of trying to integrate that with the mission of the school in terms of teaching people about nature and whole thing like that, and having walkways. Again, the walkway in that straight path, instead of making it straight, having a walkway that meandered, and having this variety of plant material and other things that could be used as part of an educational opportunity to teach kids about nature.
We officially have about 5 minutes left on our agenda. Are you a quarter way through your presentation?
Oh. I can go pretty quickly through the last part. I'll just say, I think we do need to get a big detention area, but the way to get to the detention, we can work on that.
We just think, what we did is we put a fiberglass thick grid across a deep pond and turned it into a shallow pond, but very deep.
Oh, okay. That may be the way to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't too expensive either. That was actually all right.
Check with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a good thing, especially for kids. Sort of cutting through the site this way, let's see. Long way through the site, it sort of slopes up and then back down. This is phase 1, the grades, again, keeping it sort of sunken into the hill as much as we can, the pre-K and kindergarten, and then retaining the buffers on each side and the larger buffer at the northwest corner. Cutting across the site longitudinally, buffers on each side. This is the grades. Again, this roof will go the opposite way. this end of all. Our design inspiration is Marin County Day School, favorite Ford kindergarten that I haven't been to but heard it's a great place. Guy I used to work for, Jim Olson, does this great stuff. And this is his house down in Long Branch and then Sea Ranch. Just the idea of real simple materials, simple wood structures, and then some punctuations of color. That was basically the idea. And for us, that would be sort of a probably a cedar glass, would be clear low-E glass, concrete panels, and then these bunches of colors with the doors and windows. So phase one classrooms, this is what it looks like blown up, and you basically got the first through fourth graders and the fifth through eighth stacked right on top of them. Pretty simple, bathrooms at the end. The admin area that looks over the pickup area and then looks out over the play yard, so it has surveillance of both, and a flex room of sort of a library, small meeting room type place. This is what it looks like from the play yard and from the north side and the west, except that again we're flipping roofs, so this roof will come down a little lower here and go up higher on this side. And then at the entry side, instead of running this way, we're running that way. So that's where it was going up this way, and now we're flipping it this way for better solar orientation on top of that roof. This is the main entry to the building. I'd like everybody to see it and love it, but it's actually not going to be seen from the road too much. And just go through that. These four spots here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you go from north to south on the next set of pictures as you go down the site. You get an idea of what's happening there. This is the north, although we'll be cutting through a driveway right in here. Other than that, it's pretty well covered. There's an existing driveway to the house, which will be abandoned, and that'll fill in with landscape. There's the house there. You'll probably see that corner you were talking about where the existing building meets the house. You'll be able to see that just a little bit. And then not much here, and then down to the south end is the new entry drive to the parking lot, which will be around behind this landscape. And the assembly hall will be back here. So phase two building is basically two kindergarten rooms stacked over pre-K. I'm sorry, pre-K and a flex room stacked over two kindergarten rooms. This one goes underneath, and that's a green roof on top. And then the kindergartners have that play area, the dirt coming out. That's the look of it. It's pretty simple, flat. The idea is to get it just down with green roofs. And so when you look from the top of the site, it kind of goes away with these little dome skylights that kids can look up into the forest canopy. The gym assembly building, phase three, is assembly hall, kitchen on the corner that relates to the gardens, bathrooms, elevator, downstairs, storage, and then different sort of active spaces, classrooms that open onto a terrace. So you kind of see the difference between the side facing the road onto the play field is shorter because the hillside is going down like this. And so on the back side, we've dug down for a terrace for those classrooms. And then PV panels and green roof.
Do these students eat lunch in their classroom?
Yes, a little bit at lunch, but the idea is sometimes they can eat outside the next days.
I hate to go back to parking and circulation and the site plan. Is the city preventing you from maintaining the existing driveway to the house?
No.
Because the
that
reason
driveway is here.
Yeah, the reason I asked is, I mean, we heard about the fact that left turn, right turn, congestion, and you're trying not to take trees out of there.
Right.
I was wondering whether that existing driveway could become the left turn and the new driveway up at the top could become the right turn, So you actually start to separate the traffic a little bit more on the site. You were already dealing with how to landscape that existing driveway path. But it just seemed like with the two lanes, it would be something that parents could be taught very quickly.
To peel off.
You peel off if you're going to go south, and you keep going north if you're going to go north. It just, I mean, it must be up there, that little gap between the other tree.
It's, let's see, it's right.
Yeah,
back there. Right, yeah, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So you could leave that open.
I was just wondering whether the city was requiring you to only have two curb cuts. I know there's no curbs, but.
I think the traffic engineer might have something to say about the distances between curb cuts and number of curb cuts. The city hasn't, I don't think, weighed in, but we didn't propose it yet.
Well, it seems like you're, what, about 150 feet apart for all of these. So, I mean, that's...
I think our biggest thing was trying to get as long of a queue on site as we could.
I think that's probably
entry here and exit here, so that you could line up as many cars as possible and get them on the site. Or else we would have kept this loop here, but this just wasn't long enough.
Well, no, I understand.
Now,
it's a relief instead of having to make a fairly long two-lane section up where your exit intersection is.
I guess the other question would be...
You can just look at that. That's just...
Yeah, we will. The other thing is, where do you pick up if you're leaving out of here?
You could have two.
Anyway, we'll look at it and see. And just wrapping up, we put together, and you should have in your packet, our responses to the design guidelines. And from our point of view, it all seemed pretty straightforward. I just wanted to highlight one of them was in yellow. Facades over 128 feet in length shall be separated by pedestrian passage or open space. Passages shall be at least 12 feet wide. We're proposing on the classroom wing that it's over 128 feet, but we propose not having a passageway through. I think this was set up for commercial areas, and it just didn't make sense for us to have a passageway through the middle of the classrooms. So we're hoping that could be an exception. There were some areas that didn't apply exactly with commercial districts, but we took the principles of it, like entry canopy and things like that. So those are should be in your packets. And let's see. That was pretty much it. I just want to highlight the one where we are actually.
We appreciate you placing your
thank you. Yeah,
that was super helpful.
Right.
So, members of the Design Review Board, do you have any additional questions or comments?
No.
No, it looks great.
Yeah, thank you for taking part.
Yeah.
Our City Council liaison, do you have any other comments?
No, thanks.
Okay.
I have this kind of thing, so.
Members of the public, do you have any comments?
I didn't see this online. I mean, it's the agenda. Is this online, your presentation?
Yes.
This must have went to the wrong place.
It's linked up to the SmartGov permit file. So if you just click
back
on it.
Back over on the agenda, then there's a link. I just got the one page.
Okay. It was the second agenda came out. Wasn't it? Or was it?
I think it will be.
Charles, the presentation wouldn't be online because this is the applicant's presentation.
Uh-huh.
But everything's in that is in the official file is attached to SmartGov.
Including
that was what
comments,
was
design review board comments.
Yeah, so those comments at
the
end
will
be in there.
Yeah,
and these plans are in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the traffic mitigation plan's in there.
Actually, Josh, that's a really good comment you just made. The applicant's presentations typically aren't attached for us to get a preview of. It would be great if it could be.
Yeah, that's what we've been shooting for.
Thank you, Laura.
means we have to be prepared in advance.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That is the biggest assumption.
No, it's fair.
If there are no further comments from the public or from the design review board, I would ask for a motion.
Could I add to that motion then that
you can make the motion.
I know for ongoing discussions with other groups, not necessarily yours, if the applicant volunteers to replace trees with trees, how do we add that as a condition that they volunteer to create? Not necessarily for this process, but ongoing.
Well, it is my understanding that at this time, the city does not have a requirement to do that.
I understand.
Therefore, it is unlikely that we would be putting that as a legal condition.
I understand.
So,
but if the applicant,
we can make it as a recommendation. Mm-hmm. Or as a comment, but not as a condition. Mm. Is that correct, Josh?
Yep.
Thank you. Motion.
Okay, great. I would like to make a motion that we
thank you
that we agree to this particular application, and I would like to make a motion that we then add to that that the applicant would like to add more trees to replace those that are taken away.
So you're recommending approval of the site plan review?
I am.
With that additional
with
comment.
That addition.
Second.
Thank you, Jim. All in favor? Sorry, discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks,
Chris. When do you start construction?
Thank you.
Is it based anything? Well, are you a religious Steiner group at all? Or anything?
No, we're not religiously affiliated. The goal of education is a philosophical model of education based off of Steiner's philosophy. Yeah, but it's not religious.
So, do you have, is it located in Germany or Switzerland, the center of the mothership?
Well, the original is in Germany, so I guess you would say that was sort of the.
So, do you get input from, are there typical relationships that the world or schools like that in the classroom so that would generate, help him generate this plan?
I appreciate that.
Because we want a little clarification on what I just said.
Okay. You
want
to do it again?
Yeah. I want to do it
again.
Paul?
Thank you.
We have enough people, right?
Did you try one of the crunchy ones?
I got to just start with one.
Was that crunchy or what?
Super crunchy. My life.
Yes.
a little bit worried, huh? I think there's like the Junior's cookie to crush it.
It's a neat project. You guys are in a lot of fun with
this. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Name is John Kennedy.
I hope you save the house, though. You can definitely figure a way to do it.
I made a note. I want to take a look at it.
If you end up saying it's going to cost so much, if you look at it the other way, it's remarkably efficient to say.
Or you guys make a wholehearted effort to
three people stand outside there and have
one. Because it's a really positive way to do it.
Or you can read those for even on the site. You have a good site.
Okay. Get it outside.
Yes.
Okay. And check the issue as much.
Thank you.
I was shocked. We three of this.
It's about 4 hours long.
Everybody,
at 4 o'clock, we just talked some white.
You feel better now, don't you?
No, I just brought it in, so if there's questions, I can.
Am I missing something? Is this a material?
Do you want to talk to them before?
They were about to.
That's in the whole neighborhood.
I was hoping you could just roll that just through.
They do. Yeah.
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 Thank you.
Oh, you're. I hope you didn't need it all at once.
Yeah, we
can. It went as good as it did not show up. So that's the best news we could have gotten. You still have the target radiation, the 5-year hormone therapy thing. At this point, it probably
you feel better now.
I would recommend that we actually start this agenda item by introducing ourselves. I will start. My name is Alan Granger. I'm the chair of the Design Review Board.
I'm Joe Dunstan on the Design Review Board.
I'm Peter Clary on the Design Review Board, and my specialty is landscaping.
Jeff Green, Design Review Board.
Jim McNett, Design Review Board.
Peter Corrales, Development Engineer with PCD.
Laura Lance, staff support for this group.
Kelly Tejera, project planner for the city.
David Smith, one of the proponents.
Nick Smith with Central Highlands.
Andre O'Laney, Paul's Cottages.
Ron Peltier, city council.
I'm Charles Schmidt with the Association of Bainbridge Communities. We're a community group.
One off for better citizen.
Bernice Kaplan, the Monroe.
Kavalizia, the Monroe.
Very keen on Central Islands.
Billy Nash, the Monroe. Annie Weiss, the Monroe.
Trivia, Alexander, I live on that corner.
Michael Wongan, I live on Madison. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Kelly, would you like to start?
Yeah, we do have a little bit of late breaking news. Development was a little bit complicated by a connection to Fir Acres when this short plot was originally created. It was created with a road that went in here and kind of terminated in a cul-de-sac, and another one that came in off of Fir Acres and terminated in a cul-de-sac. And that was, I can't remember how long ago that was, quite some time ago. The owner of this property and the owner of this property over here, is that the rehab center?
Okidose.
Yeah. They recorded a restrictive covenant over this, restricting this off of Fir Acres, restricting it to ingress and egress and a little turnaround for this property. And so we sent this up to the city attorney because we weren't sure they could do something like that. And anyway,
you mean
long story short-ish.
You mean that was just an agreement between two landowners as opposed to it being recorded with the city?
Right. But in the intervening time between that short plat and when they recorded the easement was shown on a boundary line adjustment and then shown on a short plat that the city did. So the city attorney basically determined that we're not going to require that this provide access through, that the city is not going to fight that battle.
So it's just a turnaround at the end is what it's going to remain.
It's just a turnaround at the end.
Which is kind of what you proposed last time,
yes.
Except for it was a fire gate.
And that can still happen.
Yeah, the emergency access. We have got all of the appointments done. It's the individual who now owns the property is Dr. Mendelson, and we have had Bruce Weiland act as our intermediary, and we have given him some stuff, and he gave us some stuff. We're actually going to run the storm and sewer along his eastern boundary between him and the courtyard. And we're doing rain gardens. We changed the landscaping a little bit because we need a rain garden. He still gets the fence, and we will pass it. But we're I think everybody's satisfied with the slight adjustments we made, and it will be an emergency access.
So it sounds like not much change, except for now everything's legal.
Yeah. Well, I brought Peter Corellis here. He's our development engineer to talk a little bit more about this. And this was originally, you know, as I said, the original city's preference was that it run up Wallace and go through to Fir Acres. So that's no longer going to happen. But Peter's going to talk about what the current requirement is.
Yeah, so just to step back to the initial preference of the city, it was to have the access split between the two entrances to basically mitigate traffic in half going in and out of the development, part on Fir Acres, part through Wallace. It's still the city's preference if that was in the best interest of the applicant and it could happen, but speaking with the attorney, it doesn't look like it's feasible at this point, unless a private agreement is worked out. The further developments, the proposal came in, and it looks like the access to these lots was proposed as a private easement. But the city's requirements for development is that because it's a subdivision, that the road needs to be dedicated as a public road. And the requirements for that would be a 40-foot right-of-way. Now, we can allow a deviation to reduce it in right-of-way width, but we would require typical sections and just an assessment to make sure that all the city's utilities and travel lanes and sidewalks could be accommodated within that. So,
one of the things that we're sweating, the reason that we are asking for a private road is that is that the lot size that could go to the center of the private road.
Yeah, I understand that.
So we're
the setbacks are set by the right-of-way line.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we've taken triple the amount of open space, and so that's not in a lot. The required open space is 7,800 square feet, 400 square feet per lot, and we've got 23 or 4,000, is that right? 20. And so what happens is that we have to start going and taking away open space to make the lots bigger again in order to meet the lot coverage ratio of 35%. So I don't know if there's any wiggle room on the lot coverage.
I think we should leave that for the pre-app and just get through the, what do you think? Just get through the design review board stuff.
Well, the design review board is the pre-app.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's why we are tied into the pre-app. Okay. It's very important because there's no point in the design review board commenting on anything if what you have in front of us is a site plan with the wrong property lines without a required right-of-way, and I'm assuming if that becomes a public street, it is it reduces the calculation for the, for the lot coverage. So
the last time we came here, it was a public right-of-way, but then we incorporated the suggestion to meander the street that the design review board wanted, and we meandered the street freely, but that took from some and gave to others. So what we did to make it simple was made it a private road.
No, I understand that, but we are not the ones that determine whether this is a private road or a public right-of-way. That is for the city to do, and I honestly believe the city needs to take that action before we review any further work on this, because
with all due respect,
what would we be commenting on?
Right. Well, we have a time frame that we have to meet. We have monies that are due, and with all due respect, it doesn't make any difference. That's the same plan. We'll stay the same plan, whether or not it's public or private. All the units that we have shown there all fit. We may have to do a green roof on the carport or eliminate the carport, all of which is really part of the final steps as we go through the process. But as far as what we need to discuss today, which is on the agenda, and that is making sure that we've got the innovative land scoring complete and the housing diversity complete. You've seen the design of the houses. They are going to change whether or not the lot line moves back out from the middle of the street or not. This design is going to be exactly the same regardless. And so are the houses. The only issue would be the carport roof, because that roof would affect the lot coverage. If it's green, then it's not counted, and we're fine. And we can simply not have a carport. So that's the other way. So there's nothing in this that is going to change, and we're proceeding with this to the preliminary plat.
Is that true, Kelly?
I don't see how it can stay the same, but I'm open to discussion about it. I think one of the reasons it was really nice to have Peter come is to talk about the interaction of the non-motorized facilities, and we're a little bit unclear about what's existing and what's proposed, and whether this is staying, this connection right here next to those lots.
Right.
Yes, the connection is staying, but because we can't get cooperation from DeNova, Children's Project, here, that we are under contract to purchase these two parcels on Duane Lane. We will be able, subject to the city engineering department, planning department's approval, create a one-way loop through here and out Duane Lane.
So this doesn't connect to Duane Lane, though.
Yes, it does. Can I interrupt for a second, please? I'm sorry. No one in this room can see that door. And we don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm sorry. I don't feel that you guys have anything to present to us in a form that we can actually review.
I feel like we cannot. Did you not?
Do we have a current site plan with current property lines?
We don't have that. We can't review it.
If you say
it's going to be the same, and she says, I don't know that it's going to be the same, then what is the design review board?
Is the purview of the design review board to include whether a road is private or public?
If it affects the street, I just told you it did not.
And
she just told us that it might. So I'm sorry, but we have to be.
You have your computer with you. Let's fire it up.
We have to go and see this. Plus, you've got the public here, and we're looking at a drawing that they can't see.
They all have this package.
Excuse me.
Do you have the package?
Yes, we have the package.
Yeah, can we just back up a little?
Okay,
this is being run through to the design review board with this late breaking news.
Yeah.
And we heard from the city's engineer here that what was given to us did not adequately show the representation of the law.
I need to cut in.
I'm the chair of this meeting,
okay,
and I am trying to summarize it so we know where
to
go.
Do you want to be accurate or not?
I'm telling you what I just heard.
I'm telling you it's not what you heard. If you would like me to explain. We've showed the emergency crash gate, which is unchanged by the recent findings by the city.
What they just did was confirm the design that you looked at last time. That's exactly what the city just did.
We've had the emergency crash gate.
This is the problem. I'm hearing something different from
the
city
and you're saying.
Exactly. This group here is saying
they're saying something opposite of what you're saying.
Maybe I should just clarify again. You know, looking at the application, what the development requirements are going to be with regard to the site access and the fire turnaround requirements and the right-of-way dedication. It's, you know, standard for a subdivision of this size to have a publicly dedicated road. It's going to have to meet an urban standard. The minimum right-of-way width for that urban standard is 40 feet. A reduction to the width could be requested, you know, provided it's substantiated. That just hasn't been done yet. With regard to the emergency egress gate at the end of the development, that's fine for emergency vehicles, but the city is still going to require a bold turnaround, which, given the current site layout, it's not accommodated for yet. So that's going to alter some of the boundaries, presumably.
You've changed from allowing the hammerhead turnaround? The hammerhead is just for our own private cars. The emergency equipment can go through. So why do we need a
standard bulb turnaround? You know, can serve a fire engine, but can also serve dump trucks, delivery vehicles, UPS trucks, moving vans. So just by having the gate at the end that can open, it doesn't really service all of the large vehicles that would make it down this development and. For people to have to back up into driveways is not an acceptable option.
Okay. In a prior meeting, we went through all of this, and you were fine with the hammerhead. You never brought up a turnaround.
No, I did bring up a turnaround. It's in my letter that I issued for the past application. This access down here and the question of that has been an evolving design feature. And, it looks like it's barred off from the development using it for general access, ingress, and egress.
So we don't actually have a specific drawing of what the specific development is right now, correct?
I do not get that imprint. Well, it's not what I reviewed online. Kelly, I feel that there are issues here that the applicant needs to resolve with the city, with the planning department and the engineering department. comment, and that when those issues are resolved would be the appropriate time for this to come back to the design review board. Do you support that?
I do. I mean, I think they've done a good job showing, you know, the non-motorized connection. I'm really happy to see the connection through from Madison Courtyards back there, and they've certainly done a lot to put in, you know, sidewalks and accommodate pedestrians. So I'm enthusiastic about that. But yeah, I would have liked to get your input on, you know, kind of the location for different open space features, and they do have quite a bit more than is required, about three times more.
Is that still going to be true once the land areas are recalculated?
I don't know. I mean, it's 400 square feet per lot, and I've verified that, you know, it looks like they can get 19 lots. But how that interacts, especially with the requirement that they provide a turnaround, you know, there may be some shifting, you know, I'm not sure.
Well, you know, I think my concern is that when we reviewed this before, I think there were several of us that had problems with that turnaround, and you explained that there was the parking space and backing up, and I think that wasn't, at least in my mind, I don't know about others, but that seemed to be sort of okay minimally, but wasn't the best kind of solution. And now he's saying that maybe you really have to have a complete bulb, a complete, mm-hmm. you know, so that has been resolved, and so we're sort of back a step somehow.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to walk inside this. I can't imagine something that I can't see. You know, here, imagine that these things have happened. I can't do that. It's just me. If you had a drawing, you had, this is it, away we go.
Yeah.
And work on that. But I can't work on what
that's
might be.
Lined up.
Okay.
Well, we'll have their...
I would recommend that we table this until the city and the applicant has resolved property line issues, right-of-way issues, any easement access issues, so that when it comes back to us, we're able to look at something which is an accurate representation of the property and how it will be subdivided.
Okay.
Can we make the first thing that we look at? I mean,
yeah.
Can we expedite this?
Well, I was just going to let you know, but January is an unusual month because the Design Review Board meets on the first and third Mondays. The first is New Year's holiday. The third is Martin Luther King Day. And it's also a five-Monday month. So I'm actually recommending that our design review board meetings be on the 9th and the 23rd. And so the opportunity for this project to come back to us, Kelly, if the city can work this out in the 3 weeks before the 9th.
Yes.
I know the holidays in there, but...
Yes, we have a pre-application.
Then I would be... I would like to recommend that this comes back as the first agenda item on a meeting on January 9th.
Okay.
And just for our edification, what are the elements or issues that the Design Review Board reviews? It sounds like you're reviewing everything the hearing examiner and planning commission would review. What areas of this project are we trying to prepare for you so you can
review? Maybe I can explain a little about what the hierarchy is. Because this does come up. What's everyone's role? The Design Review Board makes a recommendation to the Planning Director. The Planning Director writes a report, including our recommendation, to the Planning Commission. Planning Commission moves on up the ladder, and the hearing examiner, or City Council and hearing examiner, will review, depending on what the requirements are for a specific piece of property.
Well, the Planning Commission
in our experience,
also reviews before that.
In our experience in the past has been that if this does go before a hearing examiner, the hearing examiner will go all the way back and read all of the minutes of what the design review board said and what the applicant said in front of the design review board. That's why for us, we have to be very clear of a set of documents that we're commenting on are all of a cohesive set, so that the hearing examiner further down the road knows what we were talking about. That's why, you know, it doesn't work when we're just over on that part of the table pointing at well.
Do you review the house? You're telling me about the process, which I understand the steps involved. But what I'm trying to find out is what parts of this submission that we submitted that you've all read, what parts of it are the parts that you're going to comment on?
Well, you are coming to us because this is an HDDP project. And the HDDP projects involve the design review board because you are going to be seeking, it says here, demonstrating that this is an innovative site development. And that innovative site development is something that needs to be communicated to us so we can support that application. And that's why our focus for your project is actually going to be the site, the circulation, the landscaping, the tree retention, the placement of, like you were saying, the placement of the open spaces, all of those aspects that make this an innovative site plan. So those are the things you can focus on for the ninth.
It looks like there may be some errors in here, but it appears that the package you got, when it's more resolved between us and the city, I understand your comments, then we have covered the aspects that you want to see. Is that a fair statement?
I would say it seems to be a fair statement in terms of the topics. I think it's whether we're looking at the final one.
Right.
Yes, so, but in terms of the topics.
So we've got the right exhibits here.
Yes.
Okay, and have the plan? Do we need to prepare an overhead projection other than, like, gather around the plan? Apparently that was not satisfactory either.
It is better for us if you come with something that you can project.
Okay.
You know, we've all gone through what was submitted, looking at them using our laptops, so they're, you know, fairly...
Okay, no, we'll do it the way you like. It sounded like it wasn't that attractive when we did last time, so I wasn't sure that was what you're used to.
Although, I don't know if you were here before the last applicant left, they actually brought in a laptop, a projector, and they projected
it on the wall. That'd be okay, too.
Okay.
Either way.
Can we do that?
Which can be more effective, actually, than
the TV.
Yeah,
it's far away.
Right.
Okay. So, go ahead.
I just have one question pertaining to your last time you guys were here, which is attempt to acquire the vet clinic lot, which
doesn't
mitigate much of what these folks behind us want to talk about.
Right.
Now, where are you at in that process?
We are resubmitting the offer to the neighborhood, and I'm going to let the neighborhood. Would you mind addressing that issue? They're going to support our effort. I'll summarize, and Betty, you can clean it up. Our acquisition of the vet clinic would vastly improve the circulation as far as safety is concerned in the Nakata and Wallace neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We're halfway there without the vet clinic because we have under contract the two parcels on Duane Lane. They overlap ours by 13 feet. Subject to Peter's approval, we're going to put the cul-de-sac in. It's going to shrink the play yard a little bit, so that you can kind of visualize how that's going to work, because those lots have to scoot up in order to get the bulb in there. Anyway, you've got to get that idea. Anyway, we can create a one-way loop. He's tentatively, the city is, we're trying to do a 15-foot right-of-way on the flag that now exists that goes down to Madison. We can go by the pea patch on our property. We overlap with the two lots 13 feet. If that's good enough for a one-way, we can create a one-way loop so if we can't get the vet clinic, and there's a good possibility we won't. We're doing full price. We're trying to show her that she's trying to protect the neighborhood. She, being the owner of the vet clinic, indicates that she's trying to protect the neighborhood from development. In this particular situation, the development of the vet clinic actually will preserve the neighborhood, because we will... We're hoping 90% of our traffic, then our own internal traffic, would ingress, egress out of Madison. Is that everybody kind of following that, roughly speaking?
My only question there might be, why wouldn't you then turn that into a two-way street?
No, that would, if we get the vet clinic, that'll
No, the other side, the one that you already have a one-way street proposed.
That is that side, so that's the vet clinic, so Madison is out here. So the one way.
Were you talking about acquiring those two lots there?
No. Yeah, we wish we did. It's those two
lots.
DeNova, they've just been in already. They have this. We tried to purchase an easement from DeNova here so that we could go two way all the way through.
Okay.
And DeNova, we offered them $100,000 and they said that wasn't enough and won't talk to us. So right now, all we can do for sure is a one-way loop like that.
If we buy the vet clinic, the one-way
is
it
comes two-way.
Right.
And it goes two-way all the way, because then we got...
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So. Okay.
But what we need to look at is...
And I apologize for getting... We're sweating a...
No, what we need to look at is your proposal on the land that you own, and the circulation system and the street pattern that allows.
Right.
I understand there may be additional land deals which could change things.
Very good about making sure that we only did what we can do.
Yeah, that's really important for us.
And I gave her some popcorn. It didn't do any good. We can only do what we... I guess I didn't get Peter enough.
Did you happen to produce also just a plan that shows the trees that are there now and what we expect?
Didn't that? Yep. Yeah.
Again, but it's so small, so it's good. I just wondered if you had a good one.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to keep it. I got the card, but if you want. With the bird, like this.
If it's got some extra coffee,
yeah,
we'll cover it.
It doesn't have the. It doesn't have the.
To be honest, I'm not sure we need it.
Trees
to be removed. No, I was just trying to make sure that it existed, because the question was, what else would we require when they came back? Because it exists.
It just starts with this page.
Right.
These are the same things. This is just a shrug down.
Okay, so
I just want to see that on my.
At this time, because we're not getting into a review, DRB, pay attention, please. At this time, since we're not getting into review of this project until it comes back, and because we have a good public turnout, I would like to ask the members of the public if there's anything you would like to share at this point. And I would also like to encourage you to come back on January 9th when we have adequate information to review the project. Would anyone like to speak at this time?
Peter, do you like the idea of Wallace extending a throughway to Madison Grove? Is that true? I'm sort of
Yeah, I think if the opportunity exists there to provide some redundancy.
Are you aware of how that will impact our neighborhood? Because we do not want to have that happen. We don't want all that extra traffic coming through and change our quality of life. And it's been the way it is now for 30 some years, and we don't want to change it.
Yeah, I understand that sentiment. I've spoken to a couple of the neighbors about it. You know, it's a difficult one because Madison is a thoroughfare into and out of town, and it's really hard to get in and out otherwise. You know, the next one over is 305, or if you take Wyatt down to Finch. So, you know, we're always looking for overall system improvements. If this is one possibility that will serve the greater public, you know, we need to look at that. I understand it's going to definitely impact, you know, locally right here. And, you know, that's why I really wanted to just kind of split the traffic between Foraker and Nakata and Wallace and then the entrance off of Madison and have, you know, three access points instead of one. Hopefully it would disperse the traffic. And so, you know, we're still, that's still our preference. But, you know, we need to look at this as a larger system.
I mean, that was, yeah, the fine letter that was written really captures how we feel about the person we are waiting to hear from.
Do you have a copy? I don't think.
Yes.
Is that letter the Hotchkiss letter?
No, this is the neighbors in support of Madison Avenue for Wallace Cottages.
I don't know,
it was about 20 some families.
It was just written.
Oh. I just have two copies of it, but and this we provided.
Could you email it to Kelly? Do you
have, I can email it to you.
Yeah, it hasn't been. I haven't seen it, so I don't know that it's been submitted.
It's a letter that we've given to David as part of their offer to the vet clinic owner. So it's not a letter to the city. It's a letter to the owner, quite frankly, of the property, saying on our behalf, this would be in our best interest if they could have access to Madison with respect to our neighborhood.
This is our effort to improve the circulation and basically make the project oriented to Madison rather than in reverse. And I apologize for being overstressed. We're sweating our deposit, our 100,000 going, right, so we'll have to sweat that. But anyway, I do appreciate your taking the time, and I understand the issue. So I think we're clear on, we've got to resolve the cul-de-sac with Peter. And
well, the right-of-way is the big one for me.
Right. Well, we're concerned about doing a green roof on the carport because we've never done it before. So we've been arguing about this forever. It literally, the plan works just the way it is with the houses you see. But we can't get that 200 additional square feet of impervious of the carport in and make it without going to the center of the road. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Keenan is our designer.
We'll make it
happen. Handle it. So I guess we're going to have a green roof. So.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thanks. Okay, thank you very much for your tolerance.
Thank you for your tolerance. Thank you. Just a question. What is this going to be? What is the other one? Is it Malenka?
Yeah. that.
Excuse me, guys.
Is that
we're actually in the middle of a meeting.
Is that
a
room two?
Yeah.
Well,
this
or you can read it.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
Thank you.
Sorry.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm reading mine next time, so I can't have a heart.
Bring champagne when it all's over.
Yeah, I like wine, but I'll bring champagne.
Wine's good, okay, yeah.
Champagne is a headache.
That was a surprise. Can you just give us a little bit of background without them?
It's a lot of
The reason I asked Peter to come in, Peter Corrales, is because we've been trying to get this from the city attorney for a while now since their public participation meeting. So they didn't even know this yet. He just told us before we walked in. So what we were hoping we were hoping to have kind of a constructive conversation about. All right. Well, we still have this connection. This may have to change a little, but this their plan has changed probably 6 or 7 times, and I am struggling to emphasize to them how important it is that we have a plan going through, because the first plan way back had the turnaround, And I think there's a lot going on with them too that David's really distracted and he's expressing a lot of anger that he normally wouldn't because of personal things. But I think
what he said was really important, which is that whatever drawing that gets approved in the beginning finally goes to the hearing examiner needs to be the same drawing.
I don't know if they understand.
I've tried
to emphasize that at the public participation meeting. We talked about and I've brought this up to him before that.
Mm-hmm.
If your plan varies significantly enough from what you've presented to the public or what you present to the design review board, you have to start all over again. And it's fine. We can keep doing this. But, they're talking a lot about the pressure they're feeling because they need to close, a real estate transaction. But in the time that they've spent doing this, I have another applicant, DeNova, that's come in, done their public meeting, done their conceptual, gone to design review, and is in complete application right now for a subdivision.
And they came in after
this one started. He's had experience. They've had experience with that HDD process, but they came in after. They were in Ferncliff Village. They did Ferncliff Village, but they came in well after all this preliminary stuff was done, and his nature is such that he's mm-hmm. just burning all the time, and his brain cells are going, and so he's always, there's this too, and there's this too, and there's this,
he's kind of,
and
yeah.
And I'm pointing out to him, David, is this, are you, so, because just this morning he texted and said, or emailed me and said, well, this is off with DeNova, we're not going to take the roads through, so that's why I was asking, is this road gone now?
And he said, no, we're still going to do it. We're going to connect through to Madison. And I'm like, but your lots don't connect. Yes, they do. No, they don't. I have a survey drawing. No, they don't. They meet at a corner. And I guess maybe, yeah, you could maybe talk to somebody about getting an easement. But are you?
Yeah.
Or maybe you could do that if you bought the vet lot. But is that happening? And so... it's really hard. What we did do is we put together, which I should have brought in, I think I will next time. We put together, there are 4 or 5 developments going on in this area. And
yeah, that would be great.
And so I put together this color thing. I did it for the director so that he knew when people called, because they're changing the names, the applicants are changing, they're selling out, they're changing agents. And it's just kind of wild. That neighborhood, that, and I did, I think, 3 or 4 of the public participation meetings. This one was the most contentious. I had a facilitator for that meeting.
It is.
No, this is not the LAHDP. I've got 3 of them in that same neighborhood, like between Wyatt and Duane Lane. So
that's a question I have, because I'm just talking sort of big picture, conceptual, philosophically. I'm totally in support of the HDDP process. I think it's great when we can do things that are innovative. I think that's really great. In this particular case, though, it's a strip of land in the middle of R2 or R1, whatever.
It's
R4.3, okay. But most of the homes are on 1/2 acre, so roughly up there. Maybe the 1/4 acre. Maybe it is R4. I'm not sure. But it...
Along the Nakata.
Along the Nakata, yeah. and 4 acres in that area.
Those are quarters.
Yeah. Those are quarters, okay. And so what happens is when... that's what they have had for a long time, and then right in the middle, we do an HDDP.
On an undeveloped property.
On an undeveloped property, you do an HDDP that like triples the density.
Twice, yeah. Doubles
the density. And I can see why they don't like that. And it seems to me a mismatch of land uses, of densities.
But that's so everywhere that you can do HDDP, that's the case.
Well, that's true.
It's like 2.5 times the density.
Right. But, yeah. But the question is...
But the difference in this one is the public access.
Is the access.
Maybe that is the issue. You know, waving the flag at us about...
Right.
Is this HDDP appropriate here?
Right.
Because the vehicular circulation, the pedestrian circulation, nothing is clean.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like it's a round peg in the square hole. I mean, it looks like we're trying to fit something that has a really good intent from the city point of view. But in this particular example, it's not.
Yeah,
it's
doesn't have all the right pieces.
They don't have the right pieces. And I don't know how we change that, because I do agree that that's how we are going to accommodate growth in the urban village.
Yeah,
and we have to do that. So how do we, is there a way to fix that somehow?
So this other piece of property that's just gone through, they just went through with a subdivision. So
let me take a second and go grab that.
Oh, that was, I was going to say, because
is that the one that's off of Sportsman and Finch?
That's a different one.
It's not just public access. I mean, you've talked about looking down the street and seeing a bunch of carports.
Well, that was my comment.
And that's because you've doubled the density.
So we need to stand up, I think, as the design review board, and talk about the scale of a neighborhood and what carports do versus smaller cottages.
I will say this word of caution, because I'm on record saying this previously. The last time we sort of had a little knuckle fight with someone coming in for a HDDP, and they didn't like what we were saying, like these people really don't like what we're saying, they pulled it.
And they did
a subdivision and did a in-your-face development, which was one on Ericsson.
We don't review a straight subdivision.
Yeah. On Ericsson, yeah.
And so... If these guys,
oh my goodness,
like,
yeah.
So the is it so the brownie one? The brownie one is just
okay.
So is it this one?
Yeah, so this is the one you're just reviewing.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the Madison Grove. That's a 12-lot subdivision.
And are they just going in and clear cutting?
I mean, it's
so weird. Yeah, they have a perimeter buffer, maybe 15-foot perimeter buffer. And then they have some trees along here.
Is that HDDP?
No. That red one is not.
So we see we don't
that's
even
DeNova.
Get to review.
That's the one he's been trying to see. It connects to his.
Yeah.
And then that one's Madison Place. That's
which
Charlie
we
Winslow's.
Reviewed.
Yeah.
We reviewed that one.
Yeah.
That's McKenzie.
So we'd love to
yeah,
review something.
We would.
Got to make that proposal.
And then that one.
We will just later in the agenda.
This one's Duane Cottages. This one is also theirs, and they are proposing an 18-lot subdivision HDDP, I believe. I don't know yet. They've requested a conceptual meeting. So, but they just haven't sent us anything yet.
And that's the same people as the Green?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is a perfect example, which is part of a problem we were having down at Lynwood Center, is we need to be aware of all the developments and what is proposed on all of the new work. So even though we don't get to review a subdivision, when I look at that, it seems like it would be really helpful for us to understand how the layout of that subdivision might influence.
Yeah, this, I'm really trying to look at, well, you know, especially for non-motorized and making sure we get those connections if we can. So I'm really, think these guys finally believe me. I want that trail right there.
But also
that's Madison Courtyard, so they have the trail. And then that's why I was really happy to see that they've now put in the trail here. So I'm getting it all the way across. And then these guys, we haven't really talked too much about it. But they also have one over. They have a few that DeNova has.
That's the one
with the reserve at Winslow and a couple of others down in this neighborhood.
This drawing is an indication of the whole problem that we have in planning and design across America is incrementalism. All these things are happening separately, and you're stuck with having to look at some bigger picture to try to understand that. So anything we can do to help with that, you know, or you know, may think that, because that's what we're trying to avoid is incrementalism.
I'm getting more help now. I'm really enthusiastic because I went to... you know, for a while there, non-motorized transportation, we just weren't getting anything from that committee. And but now they've kind of taken a new interest, and which is really good because sometimes I really need it.
Yeah,
I really need their support, and because I've got to always weigh, you know, if an applicant is really, usually I come across as pretty strong. Well, this is what the city requires, and or this is what the city is asking for. Well, I never say asking; I just say required. And then, depending on, then you got to weigh the appeal, whether you think they're going to appeal, how strong your case is. So, you know, in the case of non-motorized, it's great when I have that committee. Because we don't have the strongest regulations.
Besides the non-motorized, I mean, I'm really concerned that means you're going to lose a really significant forest out of the middle of downtown.
You are.
This and right here, there's not much here. This area right here in the back, they have a lot of trees right there.
Yeah, they do.
And this area back here, although I found a wetland back here, so we're going to save some of that.
I walked through that today.
You walked through here?
Yeah, which one is the vet?
The vet clinic is this one right
this
there.
One, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I walked through.
Right, you can walk right through there, the trail right through.
Yeah, but and back this way and down this way. Mm-hmm. That's a chunk of forest.
Well, over here, I don't think there was much in the way of trees there.
Well,
there are over here.
Well, not a grand forest for
no, but it's not the grand forest, but it's full, if in full leaf, it's a pretty heavy canopy through
well,
there. Even though they're alders, and people on this island call alders trash trees, because
yeah.
you can't mill them and make money.
But this is why, when he keeps saying he wants his whatchamacallit there, his,
pea patch?
Pea patch.
Oh, yeah.
This is why I'm really not too enthusiastic about that
yeah.
there. Because there's plenty of cleared area over here.
Put all trees down.
And to put a pea patch,
yeah.
you're going
to
put all the trees down.
Well,
right,
the other thing it just demonstrates when you show is the combination of all of these pieces of land that are ripe for development yeah. is the way things work at the moment. For each one of those, they're all coming up with their individual stormwater management
oh, right.
plan.
Right.
When you see all the properties connecting like that, you know, this is something that ought to be looked at.
Well,
you know,
it is.
Bigger picture.
It is, and that's why, you know, that's kind of why I put this together, because I thought this is not working out very well, so they're all doing their own thing. So I gave this to Janelle and Peter, and we put who the development engineer is, and I'm the planner on all of them. But, for example, on this one, on Wallace Cottages, what he's proposing to do is take the stormwater down and run a separate pipe on top of the public pipe, which is undersized. Mm. We're not real happy about that either, so I don't know. You know, so either he's got
to
replace it.
The public
yeah.
works
yeah.
to be able to.
Well, that's what we're. That's what Peter does. That's what the development engineer does.
I know that. I mean, there's innovation. Don't you get innovation points for actually things the city would be doing?
Yes, part of the innovative site design is to look at their stormwater
yeah.
and how they're treating that. So, you know, I think there's a lot that can be done in terms of getting this to a development that is really going to do something. You know, I think he's talking about a couple of affordable housing units, and he's done those before, and his houses are modest, and so they, you know, he does address a lot of the goals of the HDDP program. It's just that we've seen the road, you know, the Ferncliff Village Road doesn't work very well.
No.
We tried it. It's way too narrow.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. It's not doing what we thought it could do or would do, or it's inappropriate. So, you know, he keeps harping on Ferncliff Village, and you know what can, you know, all I can say is, look, we feel like we made a mistake there, and we don't want to do that again. So,
which is very fair.
What are the top sort of five conditions?
I didn't realize you were here.
Oh, no,
sorry.
You should have told me here.
Yeah.
What are the top conditions of HDDP? Like, what's the real goal there besides increasing the density? What is it that an applicant does that you guys go, great, you can double your density because you did these things?
Well, the goal is to provide a variety of housing, the overall goal, a variety of housing choices to serve, you know, a wider segment of the population, say, mostly the
yeah.
lower income.
You know, the $400 a square foot is his retail.
So it's a small, medium. Actually, I don't even think you can do large. So it's very small.
These are all modest homes.
Right.
I mean,
small square footage.
They have to be under 16. They can be no larger than 1,600 square feet, which is not
and a variety.
Small
houses. Yeah, which are considered small. You know,
yeah.
around here.
No,
and
when
then
you said the goal is to increase the density. There's no stated goal.
I didn't agree with that. I just left that.
Okay, yeah.
So that's not the goal of the HDDP.
No, it is not.
No.
That is, no. So tier one, so originally when it was first proposed, there were points for all different kinds of things, innovative housing,
okay.
but a lot of it was about It was a good way to introduce LID. Mm-hmm. So it was, here, look at this, look at where we want you to go with LID, this is where everybody's going anyway. And mm-hmm. so we used to give points for that, and now we don't. This year, mm-hmm. we took that out of the program because LID is now expected. So that was kind of, this is your soft introduction, community, here's what we expect. Now you don't get points for that anymore. It is just a requirement.
Okay.
So now no more points for LID, but there are, you get innovative, you only get a density bonus if you provide affordable housing. So.
And so innovative design.
And innovative design, yeah. You have to achieve so many points in different categories.
Yeah.
So you have a tier one HDDP, which is no density bonus. That's what Madison Grove is doing. So they have no density bonus, but they're utilizing the HDDP because they're in the mixed-use town center, and that's the only way you can do a single-family subdivision. So, you know.
But so in order to run an HDDP, what are the key things that will land you HDDP for a developer? What are the things that they go, oh, let's do this to get HDDP?
You need so many points so that, I don't know if I gave you, one of the memos I gave you had, you have to earn so many points in innovative site development. For example, you earn 4 points if you provide more than 20% open space. You earn 1 point if you provide an electric car charging station. You
okay.
Earn.
So,
but this is a combination of points.
When you take an applicant, maybe like the one we just had in front of us, the reason why they're doing it is to get the density.
Right. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, he's
doing
a tier two,
yeah,
so it's a density.
Right.
So he's wanting to split the cost of land between 19 homes as opposed to 10 homes.
Right, right.
And so he's using the HDDP process to reduce his land cost per dwelling.
Absolutely.
And it appears as if it will not increase their site development costs.
Correct.
Unless they finish up having to rebuild the city sewer, which would seem...
Stormwater.
And stormwater.
Go from the private road to the public road.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Right.
you know, the stated goal of the program and why people do it are this
right.
And this.
And it's not even in the comp plan, right? I mean, we talk, sit there for hours listening to the comp plan, talking about having wood saved and other and low-income housing and everything, and then all of a sudden come down and double in the density.
Yeah, it just seems like any smart developer just goes, oh, how do I get around this? What's the minimum I've got to do to win these? Oh, right, I can double.
They're going
to
price everything.
And I think it depends.
I mean, you know, it's a different developer. You know, DeNova, they like their big houses. So that 1,600 square foot limitation is not worth it to them. It's not worth a density bonus to them. It's not worth...
Right.
So they're going to get in and out with their 12 units or whatever they can get on there.
And they are bringing a road in from Madison?
They are coming in Madison with a little... Yeah, with
so
a little cul-de-sac thing.
So what was that... I'd like to find the bigger picture of the engineer talking, his response to the woman who asked the question about,
you
know.
That was a great response.
What's that?
That was a great response.
Yeah, that was a great response. And looking at the bigger picture.
Yep. Sorry about your neighborhood, but.
Yeah. I mean, so how does that affect? How is circulation going to affect this? And that's the problem with our applicant is circulation. I think that's still, back to your point, is the problem.
It is.
And we haven't solved it yet.
Yeah, and where he keeps bringing in these things, like this latest, which is a new one, about going through here in Madison and then coming out across down here. And I'll tell you, Peter Carlos and I have talked about that a couple of times. It's not as if we don't talk about what ifs, but make it more lefts off of Madison Avenue is not something we want to do.
So he was
okay because I was concerned about non-motorized. I wanted that little strip for non-motorized, and then we kind of said, okay, well, they can do vehicular one way if they do a sidewalk two to kind of keep the pedestrians separate. So that's what we decided. That would be okay.
I mean, isn't
but this one
is that a one way out to
Madison? Yes, this is just a one way out to Madison.
I mean, this is the only way going all the way up here and going down there to get out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
You mean well?
I mean,
these people they'll be able to go out this way.
Yeah, I mean, just pedestrians.
Yeah. But if
oh, pedestrians. We want to maintain that that trail. That
because
is
because otherwise you have to go all the way up there, don't you? I mean, somebody.
There's
somebody
or
here.
Down by Shepherd by
right,
the Shepherd. Movie theater.
Right.
Yeah.
The issue is, distance. Charles, there's nothing stopping you or I from driving in through the Nakata neighborhood and driving out, back out to Madison.
Right. So, I mean we're keeping that. But
no,
but
I'm just
when the ramp is
that
chopped up, go that way.
Right.
When school's out, go that way.
Yeah.
Here's something I still don't get that. HDDP, right. If you've got to essentially take a huge number of trees out to do a development, how can that be in anybody's public good? I see that a developer's going to make more money, but whatever the advantages are in circulation or whatever, they're far outweighed by the ecological loss of a forest in the middle of a city. And to me, that would mean that HDDP, you can, no, what, that's no benefit. And it benefits the developer. It's not, mm-hmm. It's not benefiting anybody else. So is there something I don't get?
I think you get it perfect.
Yeah, Ron loves this conversation.
There's always going to be a balance.
But I mean, there's always going to be a balance. I don't see the balance. The only balance I see is heavier density and somebody making lots of money.
For the HDDP program or for this project in particular?
Just in general. Yeah, like... who's it good for? It's only good for the developer, and is
what
it
you're
good
saying is there was no consideration in writing the
theoretically. What regulation can you nail down here that says you can't cut down the trees?
Well, theoretically, you've provided 1,600 square foot houses for 19 families. Okay, so you know, I mean, even my house at 1,254 square feet. Is worth probably $400,000.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know.
But if the goal is not to increase density, if the goal was to increase density, I get that. Because you're trying to fit more people into a city. But if that's not actually the real goal why HDDP exists, I don't see who benefits. Mm-hmm.
Oh, overall, is the goal to increase
the
density?
City. The city benefits because it diversifies housing types. Because the alternative is to go down to Grow Village and spend $600,000 $800,000 on a similar sized unit.
But
for all the people who already live there, bought there, said, I'm here because this is a great quality of life.
Yeah. And
their quality of life goes, and arguably their property values are affected adversely, I would think, with that density. Why? Who benefited? They all lost.
Right.
And 19 new
houses
got made.
I just
don't get it.
Yeah, the overall goal of the program is not to increase density. The density bonus is provided to encourage developers to build 1,600 square foot houses and to serve potentially a certain population.
But that's not written down.
Well, it's written in that HDDP program,
right.
In that word,
yeah,
in the
that's
ordinance.
Not it.
Yeah,
that's
but
and remember,
the
HDDP
program
is not something like Ron was saying. It's not something that is in the comprehensive plan, is it? I mean, this is a separate legislation.
Yes, this is a separate ordinance, and it was discussed it was discussed fairly recently at City Council, and I remember being there because I remember Sarah expressing a lot of concern that not all the tiers require affordable housing. So tier one, and she said, you know, a lot of these people are going to be using this to do subdivision in downtown core.
Right.
For the downtown, and that's
landing.
True.
Cambridge Landing.
Yeah, Cambridge Landing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
140
and
units. I mean, you talk about density coming in.
So
right.
Is that the one on Weaver?
But have it
in between the normal.
So it's an FA times hello, HDP.
Yeah, I really. I wish it was easier to do. Boxes of drawing tools, but it helps us a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's renewed.
The criteria of the ordinance is you do these things.
That's correct.
And then you'll end. So you get enough points. You're in.
Kind of how that's going to impact.
Simple as that.
You got other things. You got to have concurrency with traffic and stuff. The traffic impairs.
I should act as a good chair.
Yep.
And draw the focus of the meeting back to our next guest.
Sorry. I'm going to listen to this, and this will help with the LAP.
Let's get off track.
I still feel it's kind of discussion. I still think that 30 minutes of the meeting is good to have this kind of discussion.
Yeah, it's nice.
This is great. Design Review Board have talked about the fact that we actually need this kind of discussion. The broader conversations. Hello?
Yeah.
A pre-developed forest.
Yeah.
So where's the HDDP going? On the right-hand side.
So I'm Janelle Hitch. I'm one of the development engineers. Peter was in here earlier, the other development engineer. So I got asked in here to talk to you a little bit about low-impact development. We have some new code requirements and we recently adopted the 2012 Stormwater Management Manual.
We just did it.
It takes effect the first of the year. Okay. And that was a requirement of our NPDES permit. So it's really, all these were about stormwater. But I think they'll impact this group a little bit. One of the focuses of the updates is low impact development, and I thought maybe, I don't know where you guys are coming from exactly as far as how much you know about low impact development and everything, so it's going to get you kind of a brief overview. It's always good for me to review the definition from time to time, even though I am pretty well clued in on this stuff. But the Stormwater Manual's definition is low impact development, LID, stormwater and land use management strategy that strives to mimic pre-disturbance hydrologic process of infiltration, filtration, storage, evaporation, and transpiration by emphasizing conservation, use of on-site natural features, site planning, and distributed stormwater management practices that are integrated into a project design. So I brought up, there's a lot of training that the Department of Ecology has put on, so I pulled up one of the modules, their PowerPoint presentation. This is something you'll see pretty much any of the discussion, is the pre-developed conditions of our area. You'll notice that, you know, we have the precipitation and then not much surface runoff in the pre-developed condition, only like less than 1%. There's a lot of infiltration interflow that kind of runs along that top layer, maybe the hard can. There's quite a bit of evapotranspiration, or, you know, trees taking in water and letting it out. Even in the wintertime, not just summertime, a lot of recharge into the groundwater, and then the water going out to water bodies such as streams, rivers, and whatnot, and the sound. So then what we have is a typical developed condition where we've lost a lot of the evapotranspiration. Some of the interflow is still there, but there's quite a bit more surface runoff and not as much groundwater.
What's the difference in those are just sort of hypothetical numbers, the evaporation in the first one and the second one?
Yeah.
A heavy forest and a gone forest?
Yeah, so I guess the thing to think about is that there's a lot of ways that the water stays on the site in these cases. and slowly makes its way out to, say, the rivers and streams. That whereas in these cases, you have quite a bit of runoff and not the evaporation process. So you see, you can kind of see the water table is lowered here as in here.
Yep.
So a number of different forces at work there. And with these, with the surface runoff, that's all happening really quickly. So you get these flashy storms. So your streams and riverways really get impacted by these things. You get a lot of, it's hard to sustain life in a situation like that where you're getting these real flashy storms.
You get water quality issues too with sediments.
Absolutely. It's you don't get with the surface runoff. I mean, back here you don't really have too much that's contaminated or whatever. But here, it's like the soil actually does do a pretty nice job of cleaning up things that might be running off of your parking lots, driveways, and that type of thing.
The way to think about that really is the speed of the water.
Yeah.
It's the speed of the water. Uh-huh. If the water goes fast, it takes particulates with it. If it goes slow, they drop out and stay. And so part of the issue is actually the speed of the water overground.
Right. Also the water, like rainwater, has a lot of force to it, and when that hits dirt or whatever, it mobilizes that dirt. Mm-hmm. So if you can use a tree to slow down the speed of that water and it slowly makes its way to the ground, even if you have open dirt or, not very much things that could potentially become waterborne, they might not because it's just not as much force to it. So let's see. So then kind of wanted to get into the site design and planning aspects of this, because one of the things we want to do is look at upfront, do more site assessment, and let the properties of the land kind of determine how we're going to work the land. So in order to mimic these pre-development conditions, you want to know, what kind of soils you have out, what's the topography out on the sites, this to help a little bit. These are kind of the strategies we want to emphasize: conservation in our site design and planning techniques, and the use of small and distributed engineering controls or stormwater management devices to help mimic those pre-developed conditions. We want to minimize the concentration of stormwater and assess the soils and be strategic in your site planning to best use. So the best soils are used for infiltration rather than putting a house or some hard pavement on there. Just kind of some of the design strategies. These are a traditional site layout versus an LID site layout, which sometimes people talk about density within these. It's like maybe compressing the areas so that you have more open space. Maybe being able to have a site that's smaller so that overall you have open space and also distributed open space. So it's not all just packed in one area, but everything.
Is that example showing that development that at the top is densely developed, while the rest of it is less densely developed in the example on the right? Is that what was...
Right. So it's more densely developed, these sites are smaller, certainly, than you can see, on this side, on the left side. But because of that, this whole area in the outer area is able to remain native vegetation. Or forested conditions.
But that's not intending to say that the number of developed sites on the left...
No, this would be the
number of developed
of houses on the horizon.
This would, the idea is to keep, you know, try to keep the same number of developable sites, but okay, you know, just smaller.
And in this case, they're not, right?
But you can have smaller lots, Pete.
Twice as many lots on the traditional.
No, it's really not, though. If you counted them, I believe the idea is that these are about the same.
Oh, I see.
You might lose a few lots with this kind of thing, but, you know, it's like, if you do it correctly, you might not. And, you know, the idea was to figure out a strategy, so it's economically feasible to do this as well as...
He's going to count.
He's going to count. Yeah.
I know in some of the classes we went through, we did definitely make sure that we had as many lots, you know, because certainly that's going to make a difference to developers, and they're going to push hard if they can't get their same...
So this is, I mean, that whole place in Wyatt, I mean, they just took all the land up. I mean, why didn't they choose the one on the right? Is that because the city... LID
wasn't enforced.
LID going to change, like the Wyatt? You know?
It should. Although, you know, there are barriers and certain you know, and some of them are just the physical landscape of things. You know, sometimes there's not a lot there to preserve and save, and then sometimes it's just kind of the mental barriers and getting people over the fact that, you know, it's like, That a small lot will sell as much as...
But you get them over the barrier by putting a requirement.
Yeah.
And so the question is, would that whole place on Wyatt have, under LID, gone to the place on the right, or would you just suggest this to the developer?
Well, they have to really, now with some of the requirements, they have to, like you say, up front, look at the site and figure out, instead of, you know, maybe in the past how stormwater was kind of thought of as an afterthought, you know, it's like, well, we still have this big area here that we're going to leave vacant, but now we can cut down all the trees and put a pond in.
Yeah.
You have to think of it in terms of the same things that you're looking at. You know, like, you don't get to prioritize your house placement on these sites. You have to kind of equally look at stormwater, house placement, septic, and utilities, and roads, you know, to try to minimize hard surfaces.
I sort of interrupted, sorry.
So, and that's kind of...
But, you know, can I just follow up with that question? Because this is what is important to the Design Review Board. We have pushed applicants to talk to us about their site plan concepts for their buildings and their developments. This is another great reason why they need to be talking to us and you about exactly the same things, but it seems like they shouldn't be done separately. We need to understand the applicant's approach to LID.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just as much as we do to the rest of the design guidelines,
right?
Because it's all part of the process now.
Right. So the way this will work, or should start to work starting the beginning of the year, is that you have to look at, do the site assessment to begin with. And people either come to you guys just before they do the pre-application meeting that the city holds, or just after. So they're going to need to have this information put together by that time in order to answer your questions and my questions.
We base our information on site plans, and they can't do a site plan unless they've done this.
Right. So
they have to have done this before.
So the new...
updated
the administrative manual to include quite a few things that they have to look at and have available. And
so so that means you wouldn't come in here without that?
That's the question, yes.
You've already done that.
Yeah. At the free app now, they're required to have a site assessment.
Right.
Before.
Yeah, and if they're coming in with a concept. You know, like
I want to call them the SAD permits, because that's what we were calling
the SAD permits. Yeah. And those permits are really just for building permits at this point.
It would be fair game. I was just saying that the Waldorf school that we looked at earlier today, they came to us when they just had a concept. as to how we were going to use the piece of property, and we had a great discussion about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they came back for site, for preliminary, or was it? No, it was the site plan.
The site plan.
But we would, it would be within our purview, if someone's coming in for a concept, we could say, well, how are you dealing with the LID?
Right.
Yeah, and you really should, you know, because if they're not dealing with it yet, they're going to have to, and that could drastically change what you...
It's drastically changed a couple of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
recently. You know, I mean, here's just some of the layers, there's these layers of things that they should be looking at up front, you know, topography, soils, hydrology, vegetation to habitat, wetlands, that kind of thing, what surrounding land uses there are, the zoning, access, utility availability, site analysis. So that gives you a lot of information up front about, you know, what can we do with this site and how do we, you know, make everything work.
Well, it's important for the applicant too then, because if you're talking about soils and the sites around it, which is what you've just done, it's important for the applicant to know that we really need to see that,
mm-hmm.
the sites around it, and how is your development going to impact the overall site, right? Because it's not just, we're not, you can't manage this looking at one property one at a time.
Right. No, exactly. It definitely seems like our package ought to include whatever they're thinking on their approach to the LID.
The one
of the ones that maybe you could talk about a little bit more, because what the Design Review Board gets involved a lot in this is trying to retain trees, and so their focus is trying to do that.
All right. Yeah.
That's where I run into trouble a lot, because they can't maybe send their stormwater offsite, and I'm not understanding why.
Right.
And then they end up having to cut down a lot of trees to keep it on site.
Right. Well, so, and that was kind of my next thing I wanted to get into, and it all sort of goes together. The manual, the DOE manual, Stormwater Management Manual, makes people look at these minimum requirements and how they're going to manage their stormwater, and a big thing is the water quantity. And so now they put together these lists that in order to treat the quantity of water, you have to go look at the list and try to come up with a management technique. And you're supposed to look at the first way of doing it would be full dispersion or full infiltration, and if you can't do either of those things, then you can go down to the next thing, number two. But let's try to keep them on that, because full dispersion and full infiltration are really the keystones of LID.
So can I ask a question here? If you're creating of water retention or water movement, and you've got trees on the site, is there any number that anybody has about what a tree transpires, so that you can say 40 trees equals X number of gallons?
Yeah, there actually is.
There is?
Yeah, and, for instance, just the full dispersion option. In order to get full dispersion, it's basically the 65-10 rule. So 65% of your site needs to remain in native vegetation, 10% could be a hard surface, and the remaining 25% could be a landscape area. It's like, now we can't get that everywhere, clearly, but you could do that for a portion of the site. Maybe if you have an acre, you could certainly do that. What, let's talk about like a half acre, a quarter acre. Can you get that? That might be pretty tough, but maybe you could do partial, and then the other part, maybe some more typical.
So that's 65, 10, 25, mm-hmm. I guess that adds up to 100. Where's the building?
So the building's at 10%.
The 10%.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one of the kind of the key features of LID that we're going to try to make, pretty good requirement. I also, full infiltration, that's a great, rain gardens, just regular infiltration pits, that kind of thing. The problem we run into on this island is we don't,
clay.
We get down to that hard pan really quickly, and it's real difficult to do full infiltration. Not possible, and there's room to do it to some extent on almost every site, but there's certainly, you know, if you're doing a larger site, you know, some combination of dispersion and infiltration is probably a good bet.
We're making glorified evaporation components.
Yeah. So, and the full dispersion gives you that ability to say, okay, I don't want this to remain native vegetation, so either what you have here, you can plant to do that, but that's not very economical, so if you already have the trees on the site, then you just keep them. And
So in a subdivision, clear lot line to lot line, which is what goes on right now.
Right.
This is absolutely not in existence.
Right.
But it will come into existence in the future on January the 1st.
Right. And we're already seeing it now because we already started to require some of this with, you know, we're starting to see our first few come through and trying to ask that question. It's like, how are you accomplishing this?
But the guys on Wyatt were under that radar.
Wallace
is too.
So the only
Wallace is not best.
Yeah, vested is if you have a complete application for a subdivision, or
so if that's the case, Wallace is dead as a project. If it's on the front of the
you're
on the
record.
That's always why I needed to talk to him some more.
Sorry, the Wallace project needs, the plan as proposed doesn't meet the LID.
Right. When you asked me when I was asked the question, is this going to have to change or something?
Yeah, you did say yes.
Going to have to change.
Yeah.
And so that's where he got into the argument, because he doesn't understand.
Right.
He just doesn't understand.
He just wants to pack 19 houses on that property.
Right.
And maybe he can.
I think he probably can.
Well, he's still on the LID.
Can come back and listen to this.
Some of the things that strip away the ability for us to do things is there is the to the greatest extent practical, you know, latent in here in the manual and in our code. So, you know, there's sometimes when, you know, what we think is practical is not what they think, you know. It's like, well, if I can't get 19 lots in, then that's not going to work out for me, you know. So we're working towards that and maybe doing some code modifications and things in the future. But so for right now, we're kind of testing things out and seeing how much we can ask for. The other thing is, there's this thing called exempt water. So if you can get your storm water to an exempt body of water, you don't have to manage the water quantity.
What would be that? What is that?
Yeah,
so
your neighbor's water?
Is this the catch-22?
So if you can get your water to the Puget Sound, basically, clean water, you have to filter it and everything. If you can get it there, if there's conveyance that's man-made conveyance that has ample area in it, then you can.
Well, that's a few properties on there.
Well, it's actually more than you think, because down in this core area, we do have.
Well, this is well.
That's
how they can get their.
Yeah, that's why they want to put like another pipe
on top of our city pipe. That was the conversation, right?
Okay. So
what happens if you fix your city pipe?
What? Your first principle was infiltration. You know,
right.
You pull water here, you infiltrate water here. You're giving them an exemption under that theory of saying, well, it's okay if they send it a mile down the road.
Right. Well, and this
and,
is
and
this
that violates the first principle.
This is Department of Ecology.
But the other thing is the city of Cambridge Island going to tell anybody this is the limit on the size of your house?
Well,
but it's a long way to get that 10% coverage.
So if this is in the best interest of the public, which obviously it is in the big picture, and if it limits types and kinds and sizes of developments, then we need to tell people they can't build those developments because they don't meet those requirements. I think that's within the purview of the city.
And
you should do that.
Let me ask this.
Talk to them.
Top down, we now have big Bainbridge Island is. right? It's X number of square feet. Right. Top down, you can reverse engineer this and go, okay, how much is already developed? What's left? Right. Somebody comes in, you go, great, check that off, because ultimately you're going to run out, unless you start rezoning, you're going to run out of developable land.
Well,
right?
Another thing to think about, we have the growth in the next
25 years.
So, you know, there might be some room, and this is just kind of a higher, bigger picture thing, is maybe we want to have dense development in this core area and have some sort of regional stormwater management plan so that we have the density here so that people don't go out farther, you know, where we have bigger swaths of forest and things, you know, and, you know, maybe we keep the density out farther out, you know, as little as possible, but we have the density in here, and then manage that stormwater through a regional system. I mean, that's more like Seattle is.
Well, I agree with that, because right now you're going to apply this process, the SAD process, to individual little lots.
Yeah.
Right? And that's extremely problematic. There's a lot of problems with that. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of options on a small piece of property.
You don't a lot of the times, yeah.
And so I think the point's well made that maybe, I mean, it's sort of like the Blakely School up next door to Islandwood. We reviewed that, and they were having problems with impervious cover, the percentage, yet they were next to Islandwood, which is like
open space.
Yeah, that's.
But yet we're applying the impervious cover to this place, but it's next door. So on the bigger, you know, piece of land, they're still way under an impervious cover.
So right, that's
like pollution. You sell land.
That's one idea
that was floated with the code revisions is there options that maybe you could disperse to a parkland if you're right next to it or something like that, you know, and it's like, well, that maybe has something that we could think about. It's kind of like a regional, you know, the thought of a regional facility or something.
So just to be clear, right now on January 1st, this applies to any project, whether you're in the villages or not in the villages. Mm-hmm. Any project anywhere? Is that right? I mean,
the
urban area,
plus the whole island.
Yeah.
So you're going to try and apply a 65, 10, 25 in a perfect world, and that might turn into a 35, 40, 25. But ultimately, it's got to stack up somehow like this.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's the option. If you do have good infiltratable soils, then maybe you don't need to do that 65, 10, you know, maybe. And, you know, that would be ideal on a smaller lot. If you knew you had a good infiltration rate, you could just infiltrate there and be able to do that. But,
So
infiltration and dispersion are equal in the eyes of Department of Ecology. So
what's going to happen to the guy on Wallace once this goes in? What's really going to happen? Let's pretend he can't pipe it off down there on top of the city. Is he still going to go, well, I can't develop that, so screw you, I'm going to do something else? Like, what?
I can't predict what he's going to do. I think he can still do, you know, he can still get 19 lots out of this. I have to talk to Peter some more, because I don't know that the city's going to let him put a stormwater pipe on top of our existing public pipe.
No, I think
he'd have to replace the public pipe.
Yeah, it's hard to have two pipes because, you know, how do you monitor each of those? Right. How do you know
how do you repair the bottom one?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's like if that one stops working. Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of reasons why we don't like parallel systems.
Have you done it anywhere in the island?
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't know how far that pipe goes. Yeah.
I mean, there's times when we've abandoned in place a pipe and put a new one in, but I don't know that we have so many places where you have to double.
There's something I want to get straight here. So, if they can access the city stormwater pipe, somehow upgrade it because it's not big enough, whatever, that's exempt water because it goes right down. So they don't have to do LID. They just got to get their water to the pipe.
Well, they do have to do some LID. I mean, so it gets a little complicated, and I could kind of lay it out. they do need to try to do infiltration where feasible, or downspout dispersion. But it gets a lot more gray as to how much of that they have to do. They certainly don't have to meet full dispersion, so they don't have to meet the 65, 10, 25 rule. And we've been trying to grapple with this, how do we get people to do things. So mostly they look at, okay, then I just have to make sure my water's clean, so maybe I'll put in a couple rain gardens to with under drains to do that, which does give us some benefit. I mean, there'll still be some evapotranspiration and things that go on with that, but
but then again, that's we're removing more trees for the rain gardens. This is where it's really hard to explain to the design review board or anybody else why there are no trees left.
and so it is difficult. Yeah, so basically, yes, if
so
they can...
Does that pipe go just straight to the sound? Is there any kind of mitigation?
No, we don't. The only thing that I know that we have is there's a few areas where there's a filter or something of that nature. It's not a bioretention or anything. It's just a mechanical system kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't have... Yeah, it just goes straight out there.
Ron's gonna be down there later with a headlamp and a beaker.
A lot of those go look at the spring. What's the one by Strawberry Park? Weaver and Weaver.
Oh, okay.
Hillendale.
That creek that runs down there.
Strawberry Creek.
That one has a lot of different pipes coming into it, and you can tell it's really flashy in there, and there's not the...
Oh, right at the park there.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that's a place if we could keep that water from coming in so fast, or if we could keep it kind of at the same rate right now and build so that it could provide some ecological function, let the fish passage go. I mean, maybe that would be something worthwhile, to some extent there's the tree protection, and then there's the ecological functions too that are worthwhile to think about, like the stream functionings and things like that. Maybe it's okay, it sort of is okay to put water into the sound. It's not going to hurt the sound. But it doesn't help the island, depending on how it gets there and everything. So
Ellen, is LID, that's an ordinance, that's a law, or it's a concept?
It's an ordinance.
A lot of cities have it.
Right. So if it's an ordinance...
But there's still ways, there's still these, like I said, peppered throughout. There's words like practical and things like that. And we're going to start to learn where these really are, I think I know where they are at, but I bet I'm going to have consultants that bring it up. It's like, look, it says here that I can do this.
They're all going to put one of those out.
And that's one of the reasons we're trying to take the second step as we go through this year and try to figure out more ways to make this.
Our tree committee, now renamed the Tree Low Impact Development Committee, is going to meet Wednesday. It meets about every 2 weeks. Has been discussing all this stuff. We've been working with planning staff to review the new ordinance, and we're going to be working on phase two. So, if you're interested, you might want to sit in a meeting and see what we're talking about, because these are the kind of things we're going to talk about, and I maybe haven't paid as close enough attention, but I didn't realize that there were such things as exempt waters.
It's like the other playbook that plays with other ordinances. But these are the exceptions that we use now.
We have done some good things with the Shoreline Master Program, that you can't just take all that water and send it straight out. Before you can do an outfall, you have to do LID practices. So we strengthened that up, so not every home that's along the shoreline can just have an outfall. Although if there's one already there, they get to use it. So if they're rebuilding, we still ask them to try to figure out how to do, rain gardens or keep the water on site as much as practical. But then they can use their existing system if it's in good enough shape.
When you look at that drawing there that she has over those projects, if you don't look at that in a cohesive way from the planning department, in terms of the LID. The LID is going to fail if you do it individual lot by lot. You know, it's not going to work. I mean, we really start being more. You guys will have to look at these projects in total.
Yeah.
Well,
because otherwise,
well,
it's not going to work as well as it should, as you would like it to.
Yeah, particularly, you know? I mean, in the core area,
it's difficult. It's difficult
with the HTTP, or you know, trying to get more density in there. So it's somewhat competing, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It just is how we kind of continue to work through the.
You know what it's like?
It's going to be thrown in the middle of this.
You know what it's like? It's exactly like parking plans. When each developer gets. The code says they're going to have 22 car parks, I got 22. And you go, great.
Right.
So, you know, I've got my LID, you know, but then someone develops a property right next door that may go 22 car parks, but that, when the cleaners show up and the guys to sweep the chimney, suddenly there's six extra cars that just don't have anywhere to go. And same with this water, you're going to get water with nowhere to go. And
yeah,
so, oh, sorry, I can't do it, so let's just do something different. Is that possible? I mean,
well, Janelle was just talking about the some of the language in the code. You know, we're practical, I think, is one of the words.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that mean?
What's the definition?
Isn't it GEP, greatest extent possible? It's that. Those three words.
There's some escape clauses in there.
Yeah. So, or at least, you know, I think what we need to do is start to become clear on what people, you know, what we're going to define those things as, you know. It's like, at what point is, you know, it's like, do we say, okay, this site you can't build on at all? That doesn't seem reasonable, but maybe we can.
Are you going to come to design review board meetings?
Yes. What's that?
Are you going to come to design review board meetings? If we have a controversial site that
that's my favorite ones. It might be a good idea, or somehow being able to make sure that, you know, it's like where I'm coming from and where you're coming from are cohesive and we understand each other.
Usually the planners try to present that too if we're comfortable. If we're not, we'll ask for them to come. But this stuff is all pretty new to us too.
Yeah, but you're getting a really good reception from us.
We're right on all of this.
Exactly.
But we need to be cautious. Like these people thought we were overextending our reach today. Because we wanted property lines in the right place.
Yeah. But you think about a developer buys a property going forward. I'm a developer going forward, right? I look at a property, I look at the cards and the ordinances, I go, great, I can do something here and make a profit. So if LID is in place and enforced, and a developer comes in and you say, sorry, buddy, it was all written there, but you bought that property, you didn't do your homework, then you have to say to that developer, sorry, you just can't do what you thought you could do.
Yeah.
If it's after the fact, it's not fair to the developer. They got into a two-year contract to make their submissions and develop it and get permits and so on. You can't change the game when I'm in the middle. But
that's
if the game has changed at the front end, that's their problem, and that's what we'd like to be, the wall that stops.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of these people have been in development for 2 years.
Yeah.
This has been something they've been working on.
Sure.
And, you know, we have one right now that they cannot do what they want to do.
Right.
And it's really a last minute. It's a last minute thing, but they can't do it. And so, you know, it's hard.
The task has been going on since 2012.
Well,
when you guys have been knowing this is coming.
The manager code, I mean, this had to be adapted by the phase one communities like Seattle, Seattle, Bellevue, King County, a couple of years ago. And now this year, everyone has to adopt this.
Right.
Everybody else, pretty much, you know, that's within the area of the Growth Management Act.
Yeah.
So all little cities. So to say that the developer didn't know that this was coming, I mean, well, it's kind of their fault, their own fault, you know. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, we haven't been shouting at it from up high, but you know, it's it's been on its way for many years. Yeah, this manual came out in 2012. It's 2016. Yeah. You know, so it's not that I know that I realize they don't know it, but you know, it's not that we were trying to, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just the developer. Yeah. I mean, you have, because you have the house, the homeowner.
Oh, well, there are people that really don't know about it.
I want the house there. Yeah, that's really nice. I want the house there. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, the architects will come in and they're like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, you know, we don't let them build right, you know, on the edge of a steep, steep slope either anymore. So, you know, it's, you know.
Right, yeah. But that's where we have been unwilling at first when we did come out with the critical areas. That's a good example. Back in, I don't even remember what it was, 2007, and first one up, we said, you got to move that house back. And they fought, and or you've got to, you know, make the house smaller or move it back.
Ooh.
And we changed our minds.
Okay.
So we didn't follow through with that. And I don't know what's going to happen with LID. I don't know whether we're going to say, well, it looks like you can only build a 1,200 square foot house then.
Yeah, because, you know, it's that we're about to hit a phase of development that I don't think this island's ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decisions and how we implement them and how we explain, well, how we manage them are really critical right now. I don't know where my little map went, but somewhere I've got a photo. Did I show you? Anyway.
I think that guy took it.
Okay.
It's
to say that the sooner we can get these things in place, not kind of wait and see what happens over the next few years, the better, because we're going to see a massive amount of development.
I think so. That's what I'm kind of sensing just
right,
by who's coming in.
We're seeing a lot.
What questions are getting asked and things like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you could look a little bit over the Seattle and stuff like that. It's just kind of crazy over there. But
is there a playbook? You know, like, how does a developer make those choices or understand them? Because they can't read every code. They just can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, that's we did the administrative manual. We just had Janelle and I had a meeting with somebody a week or two ago when it was obvious everybody was confused. I was confused. Well, Janelle wasn't confused, but she's the only one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know,
and then they said, oh, so then they had this conversation, and I was just out. I was not getting it. And they said, well, she said, you need this geotech, and you need the soils, and you need this. And this is all at pre-app. And so then the applicant goes to send me the stuff, and I go, no, don't send this to us now. You're done. And I was like, well, actually, I need that.
Yeah.
So we're still trying to understand. You know, the planners really have to understand what we're supposed to be asking these applicants, and to try to help explain to them what's expected and when.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't have that. But
right. Well, it's a lot of the same stuff they're going to need. They needed before. It's just everything's up front now. So people really need to put in a lot of money and time and effort before they really, you know, before up front. And that'll be a challenge. A lot of people won't like that, I don't think. But
sort of as a summary, I think all of this is music to design review board's ears.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be extremely supportive of, you know, making sure that however we can influence the site plans to meet the low impact development, that we will do that, because from our perspective, we are interested in every design being a good design on the city, at the city of Cambridge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the mission that we have. But we're going to have to be very cautious that we don't try and be the end forces.
Yeah, we're not the police.
Yeah.
We will be supportive of the planners and the engineers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm a little concerned about the trees, the interaction on the trees, and how everybody's going to.
We'll be treading carefully in the first few that come through,
yeah.
But I don't hear anything that is against the kind of things that we bring up anyway.
No.
Is the tree ordinance kind of in step with this, or is it sort of separate, trying to make sense out of trees, but in relation to this?
There is no tree ordinance. What we have are different parts of the code that regulate clearing, vegetation management, and things that pertain to trees.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we're working on. How do we integrate these? Because the tree committee really wants to protect native landscapes and soils and trees. And we got really interested in LID because we saw that as a way to do that. And so, you know, one of the things that we're discussing is how to combine the vegetation management chapters and the current chapters, because there's some overlap with them. And ultimately what we want to do is make the code in all regards, but in regards to LID and trees and native soil and stuff, as clear as possible. And that'll help everybody. It'll help the landowners, developers, the planners. It'll help you guys. So any way we can do that and implement the goals that are in the comp plan, the things we want to do, help keep the community a place we all want to live, and promote water quality and recharge and everything. And that's what we're trying to do, and it's not easy. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's different places where the...
Well, even just as an analogy, the fellow here, when we were talking about we had made a recommendation on the Wallace project to take the straight and make it a curving street. We're doing that for aesthetical reasons. And that just. Then he went off and made it from a public road to a private road. You know, and it's like, okay, there's a whole can of worms associated with that, long-term maintenance, all these things like this, based on trying to meet something that we were saying here.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk to us before.
Yeah, I mean, it's
so
like,
he, you
just
know,
goes off on
it. I mean, he needs to do this road, but then come January, he needs a 3-foot planting strip, and then he needs the sidewalk, we're looking at it. Design review board is not going to mind a 3-foot planting strip between the road and the sidewalk. You know, I already know you're going to be supportive of that. So I can, you know, so those kind of calls I can make, but they don't know, you know, curving the road. You can't do both. Maybe, you know, curving the road within a 40-foot right of way. Maybe that's feasible. But then, you know, I got to talk to the development engineers a little bit about how they're feeling about a curving sidewalk, which sometimes doesn't work very well. And
right, but going from a public to a private road.
That was his whole idea.
Huge
he did
step.
That all on his own.
And back to your point is we have to coordinate all these things so that developers can
normally they don't do things like that.
How far away is the tree committee's work from somewhere where you felt like it is ready to be approved by the planning commission?
We had some different amendments to the code, some before I was on the committee, and recently we had one regarding subdivisions that we eliminated the option for, I think it is either open space or clusters. In the more dense zones, because that's what the one down here in Wyatt was a cluster?
That was a cluster development.
It sounded like a great idea, but basically they used it to develop.
If you use the cluster development like they throw in low effect development, you know.
Yeah, the one sheet.
That's what I envision when I think of cluster development. It's like a whole bunch of open space.
They didn't have enough room there to do a cluster and have any open space left over.
Yeah.
So
they just want an open space.
Yeah.
Cluster development.
As much as we can get. Well, it's tied with the LID, so. We're going to be doing, the three committees are going to be trying to boil down kind of what an outline of what we want to do, and then bring a consultant back in, the one that was in before it was maybe bring them and help us put it in the code, or see what staff, working with staff, we think we need to do in a way of a consultant. But I would encourage you to, if you have time, to come to our meetings.
Yeah, I used to go, but it was so slow when I was there that I just was...
Well, I think we've tried to pick it up a little
bit. Well, we certainly had to with the LID. I mean, you know, we have kind of more time frames and things.
Okay.
And our chair is Cole, and he's really concerned about protecting trees and neighbor landscape and all that space. So,
but so are you doing incremental changes to the existing code and getting those passed, or is there some body that's a body of documents that would that represent the tree portion of the ordinance?
No, we are going to put a website together, or excuse me, a web page. I'm working on that with Doug. But one of the things we want to do is, like I said earlier, combine the vegetation management and the clearing chapters together.
Yeah.
And they like I said, there's some overlap. There, and I think there's general consensus with staff and the committee that that would be an improvement.
Oh,
potentially be a
improvement.
Yeah,
there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
When is your meetings?
Wednesdays.
Wednesdays.
So we're going to meet Wednesday at 3 o'clock, I believe it is.
So does that mean...
I'm sorry.
I actually need to get
sorry.
Going.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for very much. That's fabulous.
If I could send... There's this set of slides, and there's actually, you can watch the whole training session if you want to. I'll let you know where it's at.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things available.
It's really good.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming today.
You're welcome. Yeah.
We will be calling on you.
Yeah.
Thanks for staying too.
So again, I'm confused. Do you get pieces that are passed and changed and then they're locked? Great, that's done. Move on. Or do you have to get a whole body of stuff together?
We're trying to do this kind of hard. And come to our meeting.
Yeah.
Contribute. I mean,
well, I certainly have. And so my question is still, is it bits or a block that gets
done? I think
done?
We're going to try and do a block with the vegetation.
Okay.
And clearing.
All right.
And, you know, we're just, I think, after the comp plan is... done in January, I think we're going to pick up steam a little bit because it's been really it's been a little distracting. Jock Lipson's working a lot on the vegetation and the clearing chapters. But we want to get as much done as we can, try and kind of make things clear, working with staff to identify how we can make the regulations more clear and accomplish what we want to accomplish.
Because that seems critical to this LID, if indeed they count the number of trees as transpiration elements with X number of gallons. You have to have some relationship between the code saying what's the minimum number of trees that we expect you to have so that these guys can do their transpiration calculation.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we talked a lot about last year was open space in regards to subdivisions, and it used to be that the requirement was more. I don't remember, Kelly, but I think it was more like 40%. Now it's 20%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the issue was, and we talked to the city attorney, and she explained to us that you have to have a nexus or a defensible rationale, a study or something. And that's when an open space study was done, and I think it justified the 20% or.
Yeah, it's up to 25% unless you have critical areas.
Oh, that was Donald's climate change team at work.
No doubt. what we want to do is create a nexus with the LID, because LID is a state-mandated regulation.
Right.
We want to see how far we can push that to require more open space, for example, in subdivisions.
Yeah.
Because we have less open space now than we used to. If you go up there... by where I live, right across the street from the proposed site for the Waldorf School, is a neighborhood. What's the name of that?
Windsong.
They have a huge amount of open space.
Yeah, they do. That's a great layout neighborhood.
They have big fields.
Yeah, it's gorgeous in there.
And,
I think those homes will go up in value because of it. I just don't think they will.
So we'd like to have more open space in our subdivisions.
Yeah.
And you've got to tie it to something. You've got to be able to explain, well, this is one.
So you could tie it to LID, right?
I think that might provide the nexus.
Yeah,
we just had to get it passed. So we've kind of asked the tree committee, okay, hold off a little bit, you know, to look at that. That's what you were talking about, your phase one and phase two.
Yeah, now we got phase two working.
Yeah. So, because we had to get this passed this year.
That
so,
LID.
Yeah, so we couldn't hold it up.
Legally.
To make.
Okay.
But there are a lot of things to address in phase two, definitely.
Okay, so if we could just summarize this, Peter's going to all the meetings and he's going to
represent
us.
Well, like I said, I'm used to God, but it was just punishing.
Oh, I know.
On the trees again.
Oh, my. It was just like, oh.
Okay, so thank you, Kelly, and thank you for your extra time that you stayed with us. To help with our education.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
My girls are all grown and gone, so.
You know, Peter, eventually it'll be called the tree.
So I've got a couple of extra items under new and old business.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first one is that. The request of the school board. I represented the design review board at the city council to support Blakely School being allowed lot coverage of 15% rather than 10%. And the city council did approve that.
Oh.
That was last, whatever it was, Wednesday night, was it on Tuesday night, Wednesday night?
Yeah, last Tuesday.
One of those nights.
That's good.
The interesting thing, and I'm saying this so Ron will hear, there certainly seemed to me to be, to me, some misunderstandings by the city council as to what the lot coverage was all about.
Yeah.
Because I heard discussion about if the lot coverage is providing greater density, then something ought to be extracted in payment, and paraphrasing, extracted in payment for that
extraction.
When in fact, the lot coverage had nothing to do with density, and it was a total misnomer to bracket this into extra density. The lot coverage had to do with how the buildings were going to be arranged on the site. The school district was not asking for any more square footage. All they were asking for is that they weren't being forced into everything being two stories.
A more creative solution.
A more creative site plan solution, right, which also met their educational goals.
Right.
So I think the interesting thing, because I think the lot discussion is, lot coverage discussion is going to keep coming up.
Yeah.
We need to keep focused on what it's about.
Yeah, the intention of it.
So, anyway, that was the only thing that sort of.
Can I respond?
And it was, unfortunately, it was in the closed public portion of the meeting, otherwise, I would have been holding up signs and speaking out. It was called. That seemed to think that this was a density issue.
Well, I think it's a density issue.
But it isn't a density issue.
Well, if you allowed 50% lot coverage, would you have more density on the site?
On this particular site, they had a specific 78,000 square foot program. They were asking for flexibility in how that program is arranged in the buildings. They weren't asking for lot coverage in order to get to 78,000.
They had two alternatives. One they didn't like that met the lot coverage, one they did like for creative reasons, and they weren't asking for more. So in that sense, it's not about lot coverage, because they just wanted to really...
It wasn't about density.
They wanted to change the lot coverage to create a better...
And space. Unfortunately, the school district and their architects never brought that up. When I spoke, I didn't know it was going to be an issue that the council didn't understand.
Well, I guess I think it depends how you... You're talking about square footage of building, or somebody's going to, the inside... How are you defining density? Just the square footage of the actual building footprint, the floor areas, when you add them all up?
Density can actually be looked at in all sorts of different ways. One of the ways density is considered is by a term called floor area ratio.
Yeah.
The amount of square footage that is allowed on a certain size piece of property. So you're allowing a certain floor area ratio. Other others it gets to be like dwelling units per acre.
But we don't use floor area ratio outside of the
No, but the way the lot coverage was being discussed at Blakely School was as if it was being proposed to increase what they could build. And they were not asking for any increase in what they could build.
Well, they were asking for more roof area. More so they could have overhang. More overhangs,
yes,
and connect
yes. Right. And covered walkways, right. And all of those kind of things. But they weren't asking for a bigger program on the same site.
Well,
they were asking for, can you help us go from 10% to 15% lot coverage to allow us to organize these buildings on the site which is most appropriate. They could have stacked them all up and got their 78,000 square feet on the site.
In
10%. So it's, I'm not being critical, it was a clear misunderstanding, and I think it happens a lot when people are talking about, it just shocked me that the word density came in.
Well, it's no different
than relative to a school, because there was nothing about it which was an increase in density.
HCP gives me the word density, but it wasn't the argument.
Right. I guess I'm not convinced. I mean, they wanted to build something bigger, and so it means it covers more, bigger percentage.
They wanted to build a bigger footprint. They didn't want to build a bigger school.
Okay, they didn't want to have to two-story as much of it and
yeah.
multiple floors, so they wanted a bigger footprint. Okay, so I guess if you're defining density as floor area, then
they weren't asking for any more floor area.
But they were assuming that they wanted this amount of floor area, and it was easier for them to get it if they had a bigger footprint.
It was. I wouldn't say it was easier for them to get it. It was a more appropriate solution for an educational facility.
Yeah,
okay. Now I accept that. And that's why I voted for it.
Oh no, I know.
I still think it's a slight increase in density. But what convinced me was when we compared it to Wilkes School, and their buildings are proposed to be about the same size with about the same lot coverage on a similar site. To me, that kind of symmetry made sense.
Mm-hmm.
If they were proposing to build something bigger than Wilkes, or if their property was, if there was something
right.
that didn't quite line up, I was going to vote against it. Because we've had two local taxing districts come to us wanting to increase density for conditional use permits, and it's like a slippery slope. We also had
right.
somebody from a private school come and want to increase their density.
Right.
So there's got to be a reason why you do it. To me, it made sense that we have this elementary school in the north and one in the south, and they're about the same size. And that, to me, that was a good reason to say, yeah, it makes sense to increase the density for school institutions and public.
And I think that was the same idea that we discussed when they were in front
yes.
of us.
Yes, oh,
Since one is this way, why couldn't the other be this way?
Yeah.
And that's
right.
how we got to that.
Yeah. So the second thing that I wanted to bring up was, which I mentioned earlier, it's the meetings in January.
Yeah.
January has two holidays, and the two holidays fall on our regular meeting days. So I am proposing that we have two special meetings in January.
Yeah.
Okay.
One on the 9th and one on the 23rd.
Okay. Yeah.
They both will be classified as special meetings.
Yep.
And because they're not falling under the regular holiday.
And doesn't it say if it's a special meeting, whatever we say goes? Cause it's
it's just that we...
Yes, that are.
Okay. The other thing that's going to make these meetings really special.
We have more cookies. Even though it's not holiday.
Is because Ron sent me an email where, out of the blue, the city council want a report from the design review board.
Look at the
end of the Morgan.
I find it out of her.
I'm trying to make him squirm now. See whether he comes back.
It takes more to make me squirm now.
You gotta be careful for a year.
Alan, you gotta be careful now. He's deputy mayor.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to have to get a bigger chair for him.
That's right.
I need
an elevated chair.
So, anyway, so you saw that we need to do a little summary of what we did in 2016, which I think there's some good story in that. But it also gives us an opportunity to talk about a plan for 2017. So what I was concerned about was this short time frame. I asked for the copies of the minutes of the meetings so I can sort of do a summary. We've got them already.
A summary, so I can do a summary and
pull together a draft for everyone to sort of see this is what happened in 2016. But I would like, as a group, for the first meeting that we have, to be able to focus on what we would like to achieve in 2017 and be able to put that in front of the City Council, that this is what we are going to be working on. In addition to reviewing projects.
Would that be an appropriate time to also ask for some of the things that we've talked about, like being reviewing site?
I think that subdivisions.
Totally.
I think that is a reorganization of the design guidelines.
Is
one where we're not saying we're going to do the whole thing, but at least getting an organization to it. So it's all of those kind of things. So I'm just sowing the seeds so you guys can be thinking about this prior to the 9th.
So can we assume then that the Wallace project may come back as an agenda item on the 9th, but otherwise it's open just for this?
We wouldn't have more projects? As far as I'm concerned, the Wallace project will come back if Kelly
thinks
they've done an adequate job. I'm saying that specifically because I meant to say that to Kelly before she left.
Yeah.
We don't want to be put in that situation again where we're telling someone to go away because they need to work on their stuff.
Let me restate the question. We don't want to have a bunch of projects on the night. We want to leave it open as a work
group. We committed to that one if they're ready.
And
I guess if there's anything that's really hot has got to come to us on the 9th.
Okay.
But I thought that this could be a good work session for us.
Yeah. Would architectural playbook still be there, or is that still
a tool?
I think that's a tool further down.
Further down.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, just because I think I think we could fill up our plate with the whole rest of the stuff.
Could we try and give them a landscape toolbox?
Yes.
Let's try that.
Yeah. Goes
with the LID.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
It
actually fits.
Very good.
Okay, so does anyone else have any new business? Any old business they'd like to cover? Do I hear a motion for us to adjourn for the holidays?
I motion that we adjourn our meeting for the holidays.
I'll second it.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Merry Christmas, everybody. I like the way this is going.